This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, it finally happened. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. So I am a radio fiend, as I think those of you that listen to this show are aware. And I listen to, I listen to a lot of AM, but I also listen to FM. I even listen to Sirius XM. And yesterday, you know, I have, I think on my car, one of the things that I like best about my car is that I'm able to get a lot of radio presets in there. And I have, obviously, this station is preset one, as it should be for you. And I have all sorts of other stations programmed. Now, I was going through my presets, making my way through this channel, that channel, this channel, that channel. And I get to a channel that I had saved for Sirius XM. I think it was the 40s channel, but it might have been, it might have been another channel. I think it was the 40s channel, channel 73. And I'm expecting to hear some great 40s music. And then, lo and behold, I am greeted with the most cheerful, upbeat holiday music you can imagine. They have already, it's now November 8th, they have already changed, I think several channels, but one of my channels, to a traditional holiday recordings from the 40s through the 60s. Now, it's good music, but it's just too much. It's way too early to hear all of this Christmas music. Now, that's the other thing. They don't even call it Christmas music. It's holiday music, but that's another, it's another thing. It's another matter. Guys, we are living in a society. In a society, people are expected to observe social norms. Somebody hands you their phone to look at a picture, you're not supposed to start swiping left or right. It's rude. You go shopping in the grocery store, you're not supposed to leave your shopping cart in the middle of a grocery aisle. And if you have to cancel a meeting or a lunch or a date or something, and you're the one that's canceling, it's now on you to reschedule. These are societal norms that have been with us for a long time. Good morrow, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. And every year, I just shake my head and shake my head that this Christmas music starts earlier and earlier. Guys, it can't happen. And I know, unfortunately, we're going to start seeing this all over the place now. Station after station. Because once one starts, they all fall like dominoes. You've heard of the domino effect? This is what it's from. It's from what the Christmas music contagion. Excuse me, holiday music contagion. Once one station starts, everybody else jumps on it and they say, oh, I've got to listen. I've got to do that. I've got to do that. And the shame of it is, the earlier and earlier that they start with this Christmas music, the better their ratings are. It seems like there's no station that can start too early because they all see an uptick in the ratings. And I get that we're in a ratings-based business, but I really think it's inappropriate in terms of Christmas music, in terms of Christmas decorations, to do any of this stuff before Thanksgiving. Because if you do that, you don't really give Christmas, you don't really give Thanksgiving its just due. Thanksgiving is a major holiday. Thanksgiving is a uniquely American holiday. Thanksgiving is a holiday that a lot of people enjoy, and yet sandwiched in between Halloween and Christmas, you have this holiday where there are very few Thanksgiving films. There's almost no Thanksgiving music. I always say that I want to write a Thanksgiving song, and that's going to be my claim to fame. But then I realize that I don't know anything about music, can't write music, am almost tone deaf, and have no ability to write lyrics either. So I'm quickly disillusioned of that notion. But I really wish we could have some sort of a gentleman's agreement, and I mean that in the gender-neutral sense, not to play Christmas music and even not to put up Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving. After Thanksgiving's over, boom, go hog wild with Christmas music. You want to call it holiday music? All right. But it's just too much. You've got to respect the holiday of Thanksgiving. We cannot live in a society where we instantly go from Halloween and hearing the Monster Mash on the radio to Christmas and hearing Rock Around the Christmas Tree on the radio. Cannot be done. Should not be done. And count me out. Count me out. I am not going to play this game. We will start playing Christmas music on this show after Thanksgiving. That's the appropriate time. Until then, we are going to be dedicated to the anticipation, to the celebration, to the planning, to the learning of Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. Respect the holiday. Are you with me? Do you think that these stations go too early? 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. If you want to disagree, maybe you can change my mind. Look, I'm a big believer that people should do whatever it is that makes them happy. That being said, it's too much. It's too much Christmas music. It's disrespectful to the holiday of Thanksgiving. 800-848-9222. We've got a great show for you. In the second hour, in the 2 o'clock hour, around 2:30, we're going to be joined by Martin Fone. Martin Fone, you might remember, I had him on Columbus Day. You know why? You know why I had him on Columbus Day? Because he was talking about Columbus. And we respect Columbus Day. And we give, I know in a lot of places it's Indigenous Peoples Day now, but we give Columbus Day its proper homage. And then we move on to Halloween and observing Halloween. It's just the way it is. So Martin Fone, we had him on exploring. He's a writer, great writer. We had him on exploring where Christopher Columbus's remains are and why there are so many questions about the Christopher Columbus remains. So he's written a whole book exploring the answers to interesting questions. And we're going to get into that in a big way. All sorts of questions. Not just Columbus, but all sorts of things. And then around 3:30, I read a thought-provoking essay yesterday by a gentleman, a writer named Stephen Greenhut, who believes he has an answer as to why Americans are ready to kill each other over politics. And I'm not sure about his solution, but I think it has some promise. It's certainly well argued. So he's going to join me at 3:30. We're going to do commendations at 3 o'clock. And we also have the $1,000 minute coming up at 4:30. A lot of other subjects we'll delve into as well. But for now, you've got to tell me where you are on the question of Christmas music. Can you believe it's already being played? And do you agree with me that this is just too early? 800-848-WABC. Bobby is on Long Island. Hello, Bobby. What are your thoughts on this?
Hey, Frank. How you doing tonight? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I totally agree with you, because when I was a kid, it was after Thanksgiving.
Boom.
And you didn't take away from Thanksgiving.
Right. Right. Right.
And then, you know, Christmas sales came on. But I guess obvious it's about all the sales and selling stuff today. That's why they promote it.
Well, I think you might be right. Look, I think in the case of radio stations, Bobby, part of it is also a function of ratings. Because as I said, these stations don't seem to be penalized by going earlier and earlier and with the transition to Christmas music. I just think there should be some sense of propriety here. Respect Thanksgiving. Give Thanksgiving its just desserts. And then as soon as Black Friday comes around, boom, boom, go ahead. Christmas music all day long if you want.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%, Frank.
Bobby, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Thank you for listening, and thank you for calling.
Frank.
Thank you. 800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. And again, as I always say, you can feel free to disagree. A lot of times I'm in the minority on different issues, and I have no problem being in the minority. If everybody tells me, you know, when you're falling down off a bar stool and everyone in the bar tells you you're too drunk to drive home and you're insisting that you're sober enough to drive, then chances are you're too drunk to drive home. So maybe I'm the one that's all wet on this. I don't think so. I think we need to give Thanksgiving an opportunity to be celebrated before we just treat it as something that happens in between Halloween and Christmas. That's my view. 800-848-WABC. You can also find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Some developments in the Andrew Cuomo criminal case. We'll get into that in a little bit as well. And you can also email me, frank.morano at wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano at wabcradio.com. By the way, you can email me tomorrow's show, Tuesday. We're going to go through your mail. So whatever your wittiest pieces of mail are, criticism, questions, you can email me and we'll read the best pieces of mail tomorrow on the radio. The funnier, the better, even if it involves taking a shot at me. Frank.morano at wabcradio.com. Joe is in Ronkonkoma. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frank. Hope you had a great weekend. I'm driving into work right now. I agree with you 100% with the playing the Christmas music. I think that we should observe Thanksgiving and enjoy one holiday at a time. It's just, they want to rush through, and it's just, I don't like it.
Well, so I'm with you, Joe. So let's say you've got me, you've got you, you've got that guy Bobby, a fellow Long Islander. What are the sane people among us supposed to do? You know, I don't really have time to show up outside of Sirius's office and protest and picket. What do we do other than me just rant about this on the radio? What can we do?
Just not listen to them. The way I think about it, like you were saying, do one holiday at a time. And if more and more people feel this way, it's just the way the society is right now, Frank. You know what I'm talking about. It's just rush through things and they're changing everything, like Columbus Day, Indigenous Day. And it's just, it's a sad world we're living in. And we can't do nothing really about it. But just do our thing, you know?
Yeah, that's it, Joe. Thanks for calling, and best of luck at work today. You know, I wonder, maybe we should have a protest outside of Sirius's office. Maybe we should. We gather everybody, and we'll bring signs, we'll bring Thanksgiving decorations, and we'll say, give Thanksgiving its due. And again, I think we're hurt by the fact that there aren't really any great Thanksgiving songs. There's very few Thanksgiving films. Every year as we get closer, and as we get a little closer to Thanksgiving, I will chronicle the 10 or 11 best Thanksgiving films. But it's tough. It's tough finding 10 or 11 good Thanksgiving films. There's a couple of ones that are very obvious, but it's tough finding them. We'll delve into that as we get closer. Maybe we will do that. Maybe we'll do a protest outside of Sirius or any of these other radio stations. You know what the thing is? A convenient time for me to protest is 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., you know, who are we really protesting if we're protesting at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m.? Nobody's in the building. Press isn't going to show up. It's cold now. So maybe we won't do it. 800-848-WABC. Judy in Rockaway. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Frank. Right now I'm looking at my lit Christmas tree lights up my banister.
Wait, you already have your Christmas tree lights up?
Yep.
Well, why, Judy? Why not wait until after Thanksgiving?
Well, I'll tell you why, Frank. I love Christmas.
Oh, that's
and,
nice.
I like to put the lights up before it gets too cold outside, and I can't stop myself from lighting them.
Well, look, Judy, as I said, I'm a big believer. I mean, a lot of this is in good fun, and I'm a big believer that people should do whatever makes them happy. And if this makes you happy, go for it. But I think if we're going to be in an organized society, we've got to play and adhere to certain social norms. And in my opinion, no Christmas music until after Thanksgiving is one. I will say this. I'm going to confess something here. I went over this with my wife yesterday. She said, can we pick a day soon? Can we pick a day soon, like this week, maybe next week, to put up the Christmas decorations? I went nuts. I went nuts. I said, absolutely not. I said, absolutely not. We will put up the Christmas decorations after Thanksgiving. And she said, I know we always do that, but what's different this year? I said, well, I guess you're talking about the baby. Yes, baby's due December 6th. We're going to be running around with this baby, and we might not have a chance to put it up after the baby is born. So, you know, the baby could come on Thanksgiving or right after Thanksgiving. And then you know how much I love Christmas, and we won't be able to get up. I said, I was like Michael Corleone in that last scene in The Godfather. I said, just this once, just once, I will allow you to put Christmas decorations up. But I can promise you this is not something that will be repeated in future years. 800-848-WABC. So maybe I'm just as much of a part of the problem as anybody. I think in my case there were extenuating circumstances where we should be able to get a pass. 800-848-9222. Milton is in the Bronx. Hello, Milton.
Yes, yes. The commercial day showed the holidays, because Christmas is a holy day, because the Pope in the 30th century said, we do not know exactly what day Jesus was born. We're going to designate December 20th to commemorate the birth of religious holiday. It's a holiday for those who worship in Christians. It's a holy day. This commercialization is way out of picture. As far as Thanksgiving goes, the truth needs to be put out about how the new arrivals, after the natives showed them how to survive in the so-called New World, the new arrivals killed off the natives and stole their land. That's what Thanksgiving was all about, the stealing of the land and the kidnapping of my ancestors to come over here to work for free. That's all this mess is all about. The truth needs to be put out there so people make up their own mind which way they're going to go. Because too many of you on the air are living up to a lie and lying on the truth. You got diarrhea out the mouth. You need to listen to the people out here and find out the truth. And you keep on exposing yourself all the time with all that poo-poo that comes out your mouth.
Thank you, Milton. Needless to say, you will not be at the parade and watching the football games and participating in the Thanksgiving pageant dressed as a pilgrim. I think that's fair to say, Milton. 800-848-9222. On behalf of my ancestors, I apologize to your ancestors, Milton. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. People still have Halloween decorations up in my neighborhood. I mean, my family always celebrated Thanksgiving first. And then afterwards...
Well, they wouldn't celebrate Thanksgiving before Halloween, Carol.
No, but I mean, they still have their Halloween decorations up. They haven't taken them down.
This is what I'm saying. This is part. You know, again, I give people 2 weeks to take decorations down. Maybe you want to be in the spirit of the holiday. Maybe you put a lot of work into the Halloween decorations. So be it. But give Thanksgiving a chance to germinate.
Yes.
And now we're not doing that,
I love
Carol.
Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
I love Thanksgiving.
Well, maybe you can work with your...
Like to eat.
Yeah, well, you know what it is I like about Thanksgiving? There's a lot of things to like about Thanksgiving. One, I think just the idea of gratitude is very gratifying.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a holiday where you don't have to worry about getting 900 people gifts. What does so-and-so want? What does so-and-so want? Oh, I got to get so-and-so. Oh, then you got to get office Christmas gifts. Then you got to get this Christmas. It's too much. It's too much pressure on people. Thanksgiving,
no,
there's none of that.
You're right.
Yeah, thank you, Carol. 800-848-9222. Bill is in Huntington. Hello, Bill.
Hello, okay. It's against nature to have Christmas music now. And there is something you can do about it. You can write a letter to Santa.
Well, that's an idea. That's an idea.
I mean, take care of it.
Well, again, I think my days of writing to Santa might be over with, Bill, but it's worth a try. 800-848-WABC. Dave is in Manhattan. Hello, Dave.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
Frank, I was born on Thanksgiving morning.
Very nice.
My mom had two turkeys for the holiday, and fortunately, she stuck a fork in the other one.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Ba-dum-ba. You had better believe I do not want anything Christmas-related encroaching upon my special day.
Well, again, but even people whose birthdays aren't on Thanksgiving, Dave, I would think, would recognize the importance of starting Christmas music on Black Friday. 800-848-WABC. Comment as you see fit. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
77 WABC, where the action is.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking. Oh, a lot of shaking going on. Well, I say, come on over, baby. We got chicken in the corner. Woo, huh? Come on over, baby. Baby, I got some food by the horn. We ain't faking.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. That's Jerry Lee Lewis. Whole lot of shaking going on. We still have got to get Jerry Lee Lewis on this show. It was a real treat to be able to talk with Gary U.S. Bonds and Jerry Lee Lewis, also an iconic musical talent that has been knocking him dead for decades. And he's now 86 years old, so we better hurry up as he continues to get on in years and get Jerry Lee Lewis on the show. Speaking of music, I came into work last night and I was dismayed, bewildered, betrayed, shocked to see one of the stations that I listen to on the Sirius XM satellite radio had flipped already on November 8th from being a 40s music station to a Christmas music station. Of course, they don't call it Christmas music. They call it holiday music. So that means we're going to have probably two full months of this. I mean, if they started at Thanksgiving and then went into New Year's, that's over a month of Christmas music. That's sufficient. That's sufficient. What's wrong with a month of Christmas music? It's got to be more than two months. Come on. 800-848-WABC. Tell me your view. That's 1-800-848-9222. Jeremiah is in the Bronx. Hello, Jeremiah.
How you doing, Frank? As far as Christmas is concerned, that's a pagan holiday, and that's blasphemy. Emperor Constantine tried to combine paganism with Christianity at the time. And as far as Thanksgiving, instead of apologizing to the Native Americans, I got a better idea. Why don't the Europeans just get the hell out of our land? That's all.
Well, so, Jeremiah, I understand you're right about Emperor Constantine trying to co-opt some of the pagan holidays in order to make it more popular, make Christianity more popular with a culture that had always adhered to paganism. But, these days, Christmas is not a pagan holiday. It's a holiday where you celebrate the birth of Jesus.
Okay, but when was Jesus born? That's blasphemy. You don't know when Jesus was born.
That's true.
Jesus did it. Constantine did it to satisfy the pagans at the time and Christianity, which was a growing movement. So he said, he was a Christian himself. His mother was a Christian. He became a Christian. He even had his own symbol. It looks like a cross. It's like an X with a P in it. He had his own symbol.
Well, Constantine, and again, it sounds like you're more familiar with the history than I am, but I was always under the impression that Constantine became a Christian when Jesus came to him on the battlefield and he perceived that Jesus helped him win this great Roman battle. Is that not accurate?
No, that was just hearsay vision. Maybe he may have said something like that, but that's speculation.
I would be willing to entertain, Jeremiah, and thanks for the call. I'd be willing to entertain changing the date of Christmas for a number of reasons, right? If you want to talk about moving Christmas to February, I'm happy to have that conversation. We will have that conversation, not in November, but in December, when it's appropriate to do so. The bottom line, clearly, Jeremiah doesn't. He doesn't sound like the festive type. Three ghosts are looking for somebody to visit on Christmas Eve and spread a little Christmas cheer too, I would put Jeremiah right at the top of their list. However, a lot of people like Christmas, and it's a time where if you're Christian, It's a great day for celebrating Jesus. If you're more secular, it's a great day to spend time with friends or family. If you're somebody that just appreciates the cultural aspects of Christmas, it's a time to eat foods that you don't normally eat, see nice decorations. Yes, hear a lot of great Christmas music, see some wonderful Christmas films. But if, I just think let Thanksgiving do its thing first. I don't think Jeremiah's argument that this is a pagan holiday is in any way relevant. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Matt is in Monroe. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Frank. Good to talk to you, buddy. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Just want to let you know, Thanksgiving this year starts, Hanukkah rather starts right after Thanksgiving. So maybe they're doing it so that, Jewish people, we love Christmas music and it's the holiday season. And maybe that's why they're starting it so early. I mean, you can always change the channel, right? If you don't want to listen.
Well, that's true. That's true. You're right, Matt. You certainly do have that freedom. And maybe I guess that's what it is. But it just seems like I'm fighting a losing battle, right? It feels like I am climbing uphill here. It seems like every year these radio stations switch to Christmas music earlier and earlier, and pretty soon we're going to start playing Christmas music in July. And I think it's not a great thing for society. I don't think it's a great thing for the holiday season.
We need Sid Rosenberg's opinion on this, I think.
I will ask Sid. I will ask Sid when he gets in at 5 a.m. In fact, let me put that on my Sid list. List of things to go over with Sid Rosenberg. Yeah, Sid will be back today. He was off. He was off Thursday and Friday of last week. He had his son's bar mitzvah, and then he had a movie that he was filming or a television show that he was filming. And I'm looking forward to having him back in studio. 800-848-9222. Mike is in Queens. Hello, Mike.
Christmas. I just want to say that I'm making a list of naughty and nice. And the guy who said Christmas is a pagan thing, I don't know if he's going to get anything this year.
Well, it's not really much of a punishment to give him coal these days, because at what energy costs these days, coal is actually a pretty good gift.
I'm telling you, all I know is I'm going to be very busy on Christmas Eve. And for all the people listening, Santa is real, and I just got the sleigh checked out by LaGuardia Airport. And Frank, I want to also thank Nicole Maliotakis for giving the Rhinos everything they wanted this weekend, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. I'm sure, or Santa, if you are actually at LaGuardia Airport, you will enjoy the tens of millions of dollars that's coming to LaGuardia Airport for improvements as part of this infrastructure bill. So, a listener, Thomas, just emailed me a very funny photo. It's a photo of a shed, right? A shed in someone's backyard. And it says, here's a picture of my Christmas tree. It's still in the shed because it's November. Absolutely a man after my own heart. Whoever wrote that, I don't know if it was Thomas or somebody else that sent it to him, but it's very apropos. Hey, so the news broke, I guess, Friday or Saturday. The days sort of blend to me. I'm not sure where one ends and one begins. But the news broke on Saturday that the sex crime charge against Governor Andrew Cuomo, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, could actually be potentially defective. And so now they're pushing Cuomo's first court case until early next year. So in a letter sent to the judge that was obtained by ABC News, no affiliation with WABC Radio, the Albany County District Attorney David Soros charged that the sheriff's office, quote, unilaterally and inexplicably filed a complaint charging Cuomo with misdemeanor forcible touching while prosecutors were in the middle of a months-long investigation. The district attorney's letter portrayed the complaint as a rush job that did not include a sworn statement from the accuser. Quote, unfortunately, the filings in this matter are potentially defective in that the police officer complainant failed to include a sworn statement by the victim such that the people could proceed with a prosecution on these papers. What was included in the complaint was a portion of a transcript of the victim's statement given in a separate proceeding, but that portion excluded an oath. You hear what I'm saying? And even more troubling, excluded other portions of her testimony where she described the very same acts described in the complaint. So in a footnote, the DA said the excluded portion of the woman's testimony was potentially exculpatory. Now, you know what that means? That means exculpatory means that that's evidence that could get Andrew Cuomo off the hook. Now, a whole bunch of people were commenting over the weekend in the Facebook group saying, oh, Frank predicted this. Frank predicted this criminal charge wasn't going anywhere. I take no credit for this at all because all I did was read what was publicly available when these charges were filed and talk to some lawyers about this, judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys. And anybody could see that this case was a dog. This has gone from a long shot of Andrew Cuomo being convicted to a no shot. This case is going absolutely nowhere. And what it looks to me is this Albany County, and again, I don't think I need to say this every time, but I'm no fan of Andrew Cuomo, never voted for him. I don't think he was a particularly good governor, but I try to be fair to everybody. This case is going nowhere. There is no chance Andrew Cuomo is being convicted on this charge in Albany. Now, other counties may choose to bring charges of their own. Westchester, Orange, Manhattan, we'll see what happens there. But I think in some ways this could actually serve to Andrew Cuomo's benefit. It's going to look like, oh, they tried to go after him and they failed. Now it's going to make him even more ripe for a political comeback. So this Albany County DA and this Albany County sheriff ought to get their act together and be on the same page. If they're really going to be serious about bringing a prosecution, you have to treat it not as some sort of a political football, but you have to treat it as a serious criminal matter. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. The fact that the DA's office themselves would acknowledge that a portion of the women's testimony was potentially exculpatory makes the sheriff look terrible. It makes it look as if he's doing Letitia James's bidding. Because, look, the Albany County sheriff is an elected Democrat in Albany County. Letitia James is one of the leading candidates to be the governor next year. So there's certainly a scenario in which he could be, I don't know, trying to get in good with the next governor. Because if you're handling a case based solely on the evidence, this is not how you handle things. And it is so disrespectful to the purported victim in this case, because apparently the victim was told that she was going to have the opportunity to decide whether to press charges or not. And that was not the case here. 800-848-9222. Soros, the DA, ended his letter by asking the judge to delay Cuomo's arraignment for 60 days, by 60 days, so that he could continue his independent and unbiased review of the facts. So on Friday, the judge approved the DA's request, pushing Cuomo's appearance from November to early 2022. Statement said the court granted an adjournment until January of 2022 at the request of the parties. This is going nowhere. Nowhere. Now, Andrew Cuomo is going to be his own worst enemy on this. And the Cuomo team are going to be their own worst enemy on this. If he tries to handle this case with nothing but hubris, I can't see that inuring to his benefit. His daughter wrote a column this weekend saying that this was a failed Me Too case. The case against her father was a failed Me Too case. Whenever you have your 20-something daughter needing to rush to your defense, I don't know. It's not a great look. It's not a great look. Because people then start debating what she's saying, what her motivations are, whether she has a skewed perspective, which of course she does. We all would if our parent was being put through the ringer like this. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. Tom is in Westchester. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Frank. Good morning. How are you? Yeah, I had the same experience as you about a week or so ago, maybe even 10 days ago. I walked into a Starbucks and they were playing the Christmas music already. And, you know, it struck me as well that it was beyond premature. And I think the maybe part of the bigger picture of what you're getting at, too, is that it when they do things like that, it robs the special nature of whatever the experience is, the holiday itself. It robs the special nature of the music. If you love that music, you know, it dilutes it and it takes the pleasure out of it to a large extent.
Well, Tom, I am completely in agreement with you. Thank you very much. Now, Matt Sapienza just brought this story to my attention. There's a bar in Texas that is prohibiting any playing of Mariah Carey's Christmas classic, All I Want for Christmas, until December 1st. Now, the Stone Lee P Bar in Dallas is doing exactly the right thing. They've put up a sign on their jukebox that reads, All I Want for Christmas will be skipped if played before December 1st. After December 1st, the song is only allowed one time a night. Now, I don't know that you have to make it a quota of one time a night, but this guy, I think, is, for all the reasons Tom just stated, doing the right thing here. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Larry is in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. I want to say this to Dominic Carter also, because he handled this. He was talking about this Cuomo case and everything. You know, this sheriff is heroic, because let me tell you where this was going. The DA was stalling on this because they were arranging a payoff from Cuomo to this woman, okay? And why should it be right that Andrew Cuomo got to keep the $5 million so he can take a chunk of that and pay off this woman so she should just bury the charges when he molested so many women? Okay, this woman, the sheriff is heroic to do this because he was thwarting that effort, basically.
All right, a couple things. One, I don't think Andrew Cuomo should have gotten to keep the $5 million. Putting aside what he would use it for, I think the Commission on Public Ethics erred. Just so happens they're all appointed by him. I think they erred when they voted in favor of allowing him to keep the money, irrespective of what he was doing with it. Two, why do you instantly assume that her version of events, as quoted in the sheriff's report, is the right one? We have seen numerous instances of women and even some men, I suppose, reporting consensual conduct as non-consensual conduct.
True, but the only way to find that out is by trial, because the only two people in the room were her and Andrew Cuomo. So why the delay?
Right. So let's say she doesn't want to go forward with pressing charges, and then let's further say that she doesn't want to test.
Though.
Well, no, you don't know that. You don't know that.
She said she did.
You know, she said in that interview that we're talking about Brittany Commisso. She said in that interview he should be held accountable. But what she said when the sheriff filed these charges was she was told she was going to be given an option about whether to press charges or not. And according to her, she didn't have that option at the time that the sheriff filed these.
Well, maybe because she was holding out the option of getting paid off.
Again, if that's true, and I'm not saying it is, but if you're right and if that's true, that would seem to me to further undermine her credibility. If she's someone that is lobbing accusations at someone in the hopes of getting a high six-figure payoff, to me, that's not the most credible witness.
But that would never become part of the case, though. That's the problem.
Well, why wouldn't it come out on cross-examination? If she testifies on cross-examination, you can ask her about anything. You can ask her about her anything affecting her credibility.
She would never admit to it.
Well,
because
that's why I don't think she's going to testify. And the fact that the DA's office is acknowledging that some of the testimony that's already out there that the sheriff didn't include includes evidence that's exculpatory towards Cuomo, I think it goes to show she's not exactly the strongest witness in the world, Larry.
Well, Mick, he could just be commenting on the transcript. It's true. It's true. That is true. But then again, she could be holding back on a statement, waiting for a payoff.
Well, you're right. You're right. She absolutely could. And to me, that undermines her credibility further, if that's the case. Larry, thank you for the call. 800-848-9222. Now, there are three serious, sort of serious charges in the Attorney General Tish James report. But there's the one involving the state trooper. There's the one involving Brittany Commisso. And then there's one other incident of unwanted touching. There are three sort of serious incidents. But this Brittany Commisso incident, which was only a misdemeanor, so even if he was charged for that and convicted, it still wouldn't stop him from running for office again. That was basically comes down to he says it was consensual, she says it was not. So are you ever going to get a jury of 12 people to convict Andrew Cuomo on a he said versus she said? I don't know. I just don't know. 800-848-9222. Glenn is in Queens. Hello, Glenn.
Yeah, long time listener, first time caller.
Ah, welcome aboard, Glenn. Let's give you your fanfare for being a first time caller.
We're sorry.
Welcome aboard, Glenn. Welcome aboard.
I remember you back in the day in the other station before you got married. You used to call her my significant other.
No, I called her my longtime companion.
Oh, okay, that's right. Now you're right. It has been a long time since you've been on that station.
That's right, that's right.
And now look at you, man. You're married and you're going to have a little baby. Wow.
That's right. Yep, absolutely.
But I was saying, what you were saying is right, that about the Christmas stuff on the TV. They're trying to get rid of the stuff from the year before. That's why they announced in July and August for that nonsense. And you're right about the radio. They put the stuff on the radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the day after, even before Thanksgiving, which is absolutely ridiculous.
They're doing it now. They're doing it now. Yeah. Look, if you want to say, hey, I want to wait until Thanksgiving Eve, because sometimes people, as they're serving, as they're cooking, they like to get in the spirit of the holiday season, and or they're driving to grandma's house. They want to listen to some Christmas music or holiday music on the way. Okay, I'll deal with that on Thanksgiving Eve. But no, I don't think it should be starting November 8th. Absolutely not.
I have the answer. The answer is, just like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, that the last float of Santa, when Thanksgiving is over, the following day you could start playing Christmas music, but 85% regular format, 15% some Christmas stuff, all the way until 12 days, the 12th of the month of December, and then you could play all day long Christmas music until the 26th. Okay, at 5 o'clock in the morning, and that's it.
Well, look, Glenn, I think if you were the owner of a radio conglomerate, we'd all be in better shape for obvious reasons. But I'm willing to give them a few days after that. Look, I think you're even tougher than I am. If people want to play Christmas music until New Year's, I think that's fine. If you want to play Christmas music and leave Christmas decorations up until Little Christmas, I think that's fine. But what I think is, I can't think of any other word for it, but what I think is tacky is to play Christmas music beginning on November 6th. It's too much. It's too much. Give Thanksgiving an opportunity to be celebrated. And unfortunately, and maybe there are some people like Jeremiah and Milton that don't want to celebrate Thanksgiving, I think there are a lot of Americans that do. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on Cuomo, Thanksgiving, Christmas music, whatever. 800-848-WABC. Straight ahead.
WABC.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. 77 WABC.
She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, 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 yeah. You think you've lost your love? Well, I saw her yesterday. Yeah. It's you she's thinking of. And she told me what to say. Yeah. She said she loves you. And you know that can't be bad.
Ah, yes, she loves you, the Beatles. Matt, what made you pick this song?
I was having a Beatles marathon this weekend on Spotify, and so I was like, there's no way that we can't not have this song.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's play it. Let's play it from this break.
Yeah. Well, the Beatles had a lot of songs having to do with love. She Loves You, All You Need Is Love, Love Me Do. And there's actually some news out this weekend about Paul McCartney, and I thought maybe this was why Matt chose to play this. But in his new book, McCartney's new book, The Lyrics, 1956 to the Present, which is being released this week, it focuses on many of the words in those Beatles songs. And as Matt pointed out, a lot of that music is still enjoyed 30, 40, 50 years, 60 years after it came out, still very popular. It's great music. It's just, it's timeless, which is what a classic really should be. So McCartney talks about how he never told John Lennon that he loved him. And he never revealed his feelings to his songwriting partner and his boyhood chum, John Lennon. So he revealed intimate details of his relationship with his late Beatles bandmate at the South Bank Center in London on Friday, where he was promoting his new book. He said this, as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old Liverpool kids, you could never say that. It just wasn't done. So I never did just say, John, I love you, man. I never got round to it. Now it's great just to realize how much I love this man. And interestingly enough, you know who Paul McCartney is married to? Nancy Chevelle, who is the ex-wife of Bruce Blakeman, who was just elected Nassau County executive, who was in Friday the 13th Part 1 with Kevin Bacon. So there you have it. Now you know the rest of the story. So I hope you had a good weekend. I hope you enjoyed that extra hour of sleep. I know I did. I feel like I still didn't have time to get anything done. See, my Sunday, I got up early. I always get up early on Sunday to do the Cats Roundtable. And you can always hear the audio of that show. And John and I, along with a couple of other people, we kind of bat around the headlines. We go through the headlines that are in the papers locally, nationally. We touched upon the infrastructure bill, and my opinion was not a popular one this morning on the Cats Roundtable. We'll try and get into that a little bit later. But so I did the Cats Roundtable, and then I'm trying to think. Did I go back to bed? I might have. But then I was going through the papers and watching CBS Sunday Morning. And I'm still shepherding my wife through her watching of The Sopranos. And she was a little uncomfortable today. So we didn't end up going yesterday. So we didn't end up going to church, which I hate to miss. But you know, she just wasn't up for it and wasn't working scheduling wise. So we didn't end up going to church. And then a friend of mine, my friend Brian Goldstein, came over. And we played ping pong. You know, I'm always looking for ping pong partners. So if someone's in the neighborhood and they want to play ping pong, I'm always receptive to that. And I hadn't seen him. We're very close friends. And I hadn't seen him in about 2 years. And he came over. And then my friend Nick Barbaro from the Gold Shield, he came over. He said he wanted to watch some of the ping pong games. So we alternated between playing ping pong and watching the Giants. Very pleased to see the Giants win yesterday. It was great. And wouldn't you know, Brian beat me 3 games in a row. 3 games in a row. I didn't win a single game. It was very embarrassing on my own table. You know what it is? You know what my problem is? The players that I'm playing against, whether it's Brian, whether it's Joe Borelli, whether it's others, they learn from my weaknesses by watching and observing me. And as the more we play, the more they see what moves I have and don't have. And I don't do that. I'm not a smart enough player. I have to, one, improve my forehand because I have a very good backhand, not as good of a forehand. So I have to improve that. And two, I need to do a better job paying attention to what shots they can and can't hit. So then we had that. Then I think I got, we had lunch, right? We ordered pizza. Nick brought over some sandwiches. And I don't think I had a particularly big lunch, but for some reason, we met my mom for dinner. It's her longtime companion's birthday. So we met my mom and her longtime companion, Jim, for dinner at 5 p.m. And you ever go to dinner when you're just not hungry, right? So I'd had lunch several hours before, and for some reason, I just wasn't hungry. And then you go to a dinner, especially if it's someone's birthday, you kind of have to force feed yourself. It's the worst thing in the world. The worst thing in the world. But I got this burrata flight, which was quite good. But then I ordered a filet of sole entree, and it was good. I tasted a bite or two, and my wife says, "No, you're gonna make yourself sick if you're that uncomfortable and you don't want to eat. Don't eat." So I didn't really eat any of it. We took it home. It was delicious, though. It's no reflection on the filet of sole. But I was also just so tired. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why I was so full and so tired. But it was difficult to kind of, I don't know, maybe I got thrown off by changing the clocks. But it was difficult. So then when we got home around 7, and you're left with a choice. At least I'm left with a choice when you're fast approaching 1 a.m. And you're left with a choice of do you A, prepare for the show or continue preparing, or B, do you sleep so that you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed? So I chose option B because my thinking was, okay, let me get a little sleep. This way, even if I'm not so prepared, at least I won't sound like a zombie and make all these rookie mistakes. So I chose to sleep instead of preparing. And then I just caught another half hour, 40 minutes on this couch that management and ownership, big thank you, John and Margot Katsimatidis, have been kind enough to put in the green room. So now I feel well rested, but I hope that those couple of hours of preparing less than I otherwise would are not reflected in the on-air product. By the way, speaking of Barada, we're going to get into, in the 2 o'clock hour, foods that seemingly came out of nowhere. So give that some thought in the next couple of minutes, and then we'll get into that. 2:30, Martin Fone will be here. And interestingly enough and ironically enough, he will be joining us on the telephone. And then at 3:30, Stephen Greenhut will be here. Stephen Greenhut, not exactly a household name, but he wrote a thought-provoking column about why politics seems to dominate so many aspects of our lives. And I thought he raised some good points. There's some areas where I think he might be deficient, but we're going to get into that and a whole lot more. You want to comment? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. On Twitter, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. Let me say a quick hello to Mike in Manhattan. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Frank. For people that don't have the Thanksgiving feeling, there's a movie called Trains, Planes, and Automobiles with John Candy.
And Steve Martin. Great film.
Steve Martin, yeah, where he doesn't have a family or any place to go for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that is always when I – and thanks for the call, Mike. Whenever I make my list of the best Thanksgiving films, that's always at or near the top. We're going to do that. We'll do it on Thanksgiving Eve. I think we're working Thanksgiving Eve. So we'll be here, and I'll go through the list of the best Thanksgiving films, both in general and specifically available on streaming. Until next hour, help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
So, and good morrow, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Because I am watching The Sopranos with my wife, I am really enjoying going back and listening to the Talking Sopranos podcast that Michael Imperioli, who played Christopher, does with the with Steve Sciarippa, who plays Bacala. And if you're a Sopranos fan, it's great. But I find it's so much better if you're actually watching the show and then listening to the episodes, because every episode of the podcast correlates with the show. So I go back. Recently, we watched an episode. I'm trying to think what the episode was. It was, I don't remember, but it was from around 2001. And Rosalie Aprile is having dinner or lunch with Edie Falco's character, Carmela Soprano. And basically, the chef, the owner of the restaurant, says, oh, you got to try this new cheese that I got from Italy called burrata. And, you know, she tries it. Rosalie Aprile tries it. And she's unimpressed. She said, oh, just basically tastes like mozzarella. But it's funny. I'm watching the episode, and it didn't look like she was eating burrata. Burrata, if you don't know, is a it's basically mozzarella on the outside, and then it's a soft cheese on the inside. It's delicious. It's delicious. Last night, even though I had to force feed myself, I had a flight of burratas where they had four different types of burrata in four different sauces. It's absolutely delicious. And it's not, as far as cheese goes anyway, it's not the worst cheese for you health-wise. So she tries the burrata. She's unimpressed. But I notice, doesn't look like burrata. Michael Imperioli wrote that episode. So I was particularly eager to hear his commentary on this particular show. Lo and behold, he points out, and look, it's different to go back in time 21 years ago or 20 years ago and remember what was going on with certain things. But he points out that 20 years ago, burrata was not popularly available in a lot of American restaurants. It was widely consumed in Italy, but it was not a big thing here in the United States. And that's why they couldn't just go to the store and buy some burrata and have them eat burrata. And it was sort of a novelty on the show, even in the year 2001. And I thought that was so interesting because now you go into any decent Italian restaurant and they have burrata. The episode, I think, was the Telltale Mozzarella. I think that's the episode. But anyway, you go into any restaurant, including where I was last night, and they have burrata. And it reminded me of, it got me thinking, why do certain foods come out of nowhere? Why do certain foods become popularized? Because food, in some ways, is a little bit different from fashion. It's a little bit different from music. But in some ways, maybe it's not that different. Maybe for the same reasons that food takes off, that fashion takes off, or music, or a certain type of film, maybe food takes off for the same reason. And I was thinking of one episode of Seinfeld, season 3, episode 3, a good episode called The Pen, in which Jerry is talking to his parents and says this.
But, you know, look at the sun-dried tomatoes. Where were they 5 years ago? You know, it just goes to show you. You never know what could happen to a vegetable. Could just take right off at any time.
Now, that episode was from the early 90s. I don't know if it was 91 or 93, but it was from the early 90s. And Jerry was right. Jerry was right. It seemed like the sun-dried tomato was one of those foods that came out of nowhere, that it just all of a sudden took off. It went from being a novelty item to being ubiquitous. And I remember the first time I tried sun-dried tomatoes. I said, boy, what is this? I've never tried this before. I didn't grow up eating it. But all of a sudden, boom, same food. The television show Friends. Elliot Gould, one of my favorite actors in the world, who I've had the good fortune of interviewing before. Elliot Gould is playing Ross Geller's father. I think it's Jack Geller. And Elliot Gould is really one of the aspects of that show I really enjoy. I'm not the biggest Friends fan in the world, but I always enjoy Elliot Gould. And so Elliot Gould is at a restaurant dining with his son Ross. And Elliot Gould's character, and this is a couple of years after that Seinfeld clip I just played you, Elliot Gould's character says this.
5 years ago, if somebody had said to me, here's a tomato that looks like a prune, I'd have said, get out of my office.
And that, you know, one part that I forgot to cut in that clip is he said, I would love to have gotten some of that sun-dried tomato business. And he makes basically the same point, which is that sun-dried tomatoes came out of nowhere. So I want to ask you a question. Why do certain foods become trendy? Can you think of any other examples of beyond burrata, beyond sun-dried tomatoes, of food that was nowhere, not even something that people heard about, and all of a sudden it seemed like it was everywhere? So I want to make a list of these foods. And then, two, I'm wondering if you can give me some insight into why that happens. Because I don't think it's a situation where a celebrity is seen eating a certain type of food and then everyone says, oh, I've got to try blank. It's got to be more to it than that. Do these food groups have lobbyists that are lobbying restaurants on their behalf? Or, and I'm saying that only partially tongue in cheek. Are they heavily promoted? One good example, it's not exactly what we're talking about, but one good example of what I'm describing is Tito's vodka. 7 years ago, you go to a bar and order a Tito's martini, they would send you to a Mexican restaurant. They had no idea what Tito's was. Now, people are ordering Tito's, 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 Tito's. What happened? What changed? And I know Malcolm Gladwell has explored this concept in his books a little bit about when, especially the book The Tipping Point. But when does a tipping point occur? And why does a tipping point with respect to food occur? So I was trying to make a list right before the show of foods that became trendy all of a sudden. And one of the best examples that I could think of is quinoa. Quinoa. I remember when I first started seeing quinoa on menus. It's a grain. It was, I always thought it was quinoa. I never even heard of quinoa. And there it was. Not just on this menu, but on every menu. Kale. Kale was always around, but it was sort of a backbencher vegetable. Kale exploded in popularity. And I think maybe this is going back 25 years or so. But I think the same thing can be said of pesto sauce. Pesto sauce was never a staple when I was growing up. It kind of seems like it exploded in popularity 25 years ago. And thank goodness it did, because I love pesto sauce. Love it. Can you think of any other examples? And whether you can think of an example or not, can you think of an explanation as to why? Because I'd love to explore, I'd love to bet on the next food. I'd love to invest in the next food. It's like Jack Geller said, I should have been in that sun-dried tomato business. 800-848-WABC. Loretta is in New Rochelle. Hello, Loretta.
Hello. I can think of two vegetables that, like, exploded in recent years that most people wouldn't even look at, like, even 10 years ago. One is avocados. I always like them because my mom happened to like them, but I remember, like, as a teenager when I'd eat one, my friends would say, ew, what are you eating? That's gross. Now, avocado toast.
You're right. You're right. Growing up, there was no such thing as avocado toast. There was peppers and eggs in the round bread. There was no avocado toast.
No, not at all. And, I mean, like, I liked them, like I said, but, like, everyone thought I was weird that I liked them. Like, most people didn't even know what an avocado was. And the second vegetable that exploded in, like, the last 5 to 10 years are Brussels sprouts.
They used
to be the most hated, disgusting, horrible vegetables. Nobody wanted to look at them. You'd have them maybe at Thanksgiving, and they were, like, the last to go. Now, everybody loves them. But that has to do with the way they're prepared now. They're prepared, like, in much, like, more tasty ways, not just, like, boiled with butter thrown on them. Now they're, like, bacon and orange and, you know, all different kinds of flavors.
So do you think the fact whether a food becomes trendy or not is dependent upon different recipes that include that food?
I definitely think that's what happens. If somebody comes up with some new way to make something and it ends up being really good as opposed to being like something that you didn't like, and then it just explodes from there. And then people do different variations of whatever was being done at first with the food or the vegetable. You know, it just takes that one the one person may be experimenting with it.
Okay, so that this is as good of a rationale as I've heard, Loretta, that it has to do with the recipe. It's not the food, it's the recipe. Interesting. I'm not sure that applies to burrata. I'm not sure that applies to sun-dried tomatoes. And again, you know, if I think Jack Geller, as portrayed brilliantly by Elliot Gould, said it best.
Tell you one thing, I wouldn't mind having a piece of this sun-dried tomato business. 5 years ago, if somebody had said to me, here's a tomato that looks like a prune, I'd have said, get out of my office.
800-848-9222. Chris is in Mount Vernon. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, I remember, I say Nutella. I remember when I was a kid, my mother would send me to school with like a Nutella sandwich, and the kids would be like, ew, you're eating a chocolate sandwich. Look at Chris, he's eating a chocolate sandwich. Now it's like one of the most popular things. They blew up. It's like humongous now.
That's interesting. So Nutella was not big when you were a kid, but your mom still gave it to you.
Not at all. You had to go to an Italian deli or whatever, something like an Italian bakery or whatever, and that's where they would sell it. They didn't sell it everywhere.
Yeah, well,
it was very hard to find when I was
kidding. And what do you think it was that led Nutella to be a fringe treat to being something that's now mainstream?
I think I started it. Nah, I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no clue.
It is funny how that happens, though, isn't it?
It tastes so good.
Chris, I'm losing you there. 800-848-9222. Seamus is in Massapequa. Hello, Seamus.
Hey, Frank. I work in Hunts Point Produce Market in the Bronx, so I'm on the edge of a lot of these trendy kind of food things. And a lot of it is the cooking shows. Somebody will do a show on something, and then all of a sudden the item in the market all of a sudden becomes scarce because everybody's looking for this thing that they did a show on the other day, blah, blah, blah. And another one is health things.
Like, well, yes, you're right. When everybody was going low carb, all of a sudden bread fell out of favor, and you saw pork rinds fall back into favor, or beef jerky. You know, that's a good point. I did consider the diet thing, but I had not considered what you mentioned about these cooking shows showcasing certain ingredients, and then all of a sudden people jumping on that bandwagon.
Yeah, and this, like, I remember a couple, like last year, celery, there was a thing where everybody was drinking celery juice because it was supposed to be a good cleanse or something like that. And, my God, celery tripled in price in the market, and it stayed that way for a very long time.
Yeah.
And now that trend seemed to have gone away, and it's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Thank you there, Seamus. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes if you put a film, put something in a popular film or television program, sometimes that can cause things to explode. Like, you remember the film Sideways with Paul Giamatti? It's a great film. And Paul Giamatti's character in that film, loves Pinot Noir and the wine, Pinot Noir. After that film came out, people started drinking Pinot Noir like crazy. And I just got an email here from Doug who writes, Greek yogurt, that's something that that came out of nowhere. He's right. When I was a kid, we had standard yogurt. We had regular yogurt. None of this Greek yogurt. Now, my refrigerator is filled with Greek yogurt. And I'm not the only one. So why did Greek yogurt take off all of a sudden? So we have the Loretta theory, which is that it's not the food, it's the recipe. You have the corollary, the Seamus addendum to the Loretta theory, which is once people start using it on a popular cooking show, that's when it explodes. And look, you always have the dietary reasons, like different fad diets that are popular at different times that will lead to different foods being popular. 800-848-WABC. Martin Fone joining me in about 10 minutes. Eddie is on Long Island. Hello, Eddie.
There once was a lady named Perkins who was extremely fond of eating spiced gherkins. At a luncheon one day, she put 50 away and pickled her internal organs.
Well done, Eddie. 800-848-9222. Bill is on Staten Island. Hello, Bill.
Yes, my wife and I eat out a lot,
Bronzini.
Oh, Bronzino the fish?
The fish.
That is a great one. That is, I'm putting that on my list. You are absolutely right. 10 years ago, I'd go to restaurant after restaurant. Nobody was ordering Bronzino. 10 years ago, the fish to order was Chilean sea bass. That was the fish. Now you're right. It's Bronzino, 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 wherever you go.
Correct.
Great one. Why do you think it came out of nowhere?
I have no idea. I don't eat it.
Yeah, I don't care for it. I end up getting talked into it all the time, but it's not my favorite fish. You know, sometimes, and Bill's got me thinking now, sometimes they will push certain foods because there's an abundance of it. Now, tilapia, for instance, it's one of the worst fishes you can eat. It's not only unhealthy, but it doesn't have any actual flavor. It's all farm-raised. It's not good for you. And I won't eat it. But all tilapia is, it tastes like nothing. So all tilapia is a holder of sauce. It's a holder for whatever sauce you put on it. There's no unique flavor on its own. I don't think you can go out and buy a wild tilapia. It's just this farm-raised garbage. And all of a sudden, it was in every restaurant seemingly overnight because the fish industry was making it like crazy. It was cheap. It would go with any sauce. And it tasted like nothing, so it went with everything. And it was inexpensive for the restaurants to buy. So tilapia, I'm going to put tilapia on my list too. All right, so far we have burrata, sun-dried tomatoes, quinoa, pesto, Bronzino, tilapia, and Nutella. I'm not sure I agree on the Nutella. Because maybe because I grew up in a family that was of Italian descent, we were always familiar with Nutella. Maybe it wasn't mainstream for non-ethnic families. I don't know. But I feel like Nutella was big. I feel like it was. 800-848-WABC. Matt, did you eat Nutella growing up?
Yes, you absolutely. Yeah.
So that's why I'm not sure that the caller's right about Nutella coming out of nowhere.
It was always, for me, it was either Nutella or Fluffernutter. I always chose Nutella over Fluffernutter any day.
Well, Fluff is the product. The Fluffernutter is the sandwich.
Is the sandwich. Yeah. I always called it Fluffernutter.
But Fluffernutter, that's a sandwich that people have been eating since the 50s. So that's something that's been consistently – in fact, that might be an example of a food that has fallen out of favor a little bit as people have learned more about sugar and carbs and things like that. Sherry in Brooklyn, hello.
Good morning, Frank. Just a couple of things. Dried cranberries.
Dried cranberries. That was not a big thing years ago?
No, because the only time you had cranberries was cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right, right.
But now they're all over the place.
You're right. You talk about something that's revolting. Cranberry sauce has got to be one of the worst things to eat in the world, especially out of a can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then wheatgrass was big a long time ago. That was the health of it.
Yeah, that's true. Wheat germ was big, too. That's both good ones. Ron in Jersey City, what do you have for us, Ron?
How about bruschetta?
You don't think bruschetta was always popular?
No. That was a poor man's concoction. Years ago, when the Italians didn't have much money in the old days, they just put together, they wouldn't waste anything. So you have a piece of old, day-old bread and put a little oil to soften it up and flavor it up with with seasoning and tomato.
Interesting. It was sometimes a necessity is the mother of invention. Thanks, Ron. John is in Garden City. Hello, John.
Hey, I was thinking there's the big hot sauce craze, like sriracha and all these different hot sauces got crazy all of a sudden. You know, I never thought of hot sauce ever eating in my food source, but it became such a hot thing, especially sriracha. But that's been something I've been noticing.
Why?
It's a little more seasoned now, but it's been around for a while. I'm sorry.
Why do you think hot sauce exploded in popularity? Why do you think hot sauce became hot?
I think at one point a lot of food places started promoting hot sauces. I think that that's Mexican food places. They have promoted the Tabasco and stuff, and that gets became more and more popular.
Well, it could be. Go ahead, John. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and also words. No, you ever hear these words pop out of nowhere? Like, I remember at one point when Steve Mnuchin was saying weaponized. Everyone started using the word weaponized.
So well, weaponized. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's always – that always happens. There's always words that get added to the lexicon every year and words that fall out of favor, right? But, you know, I think when we discuss these foods, in addition to making the list of foods, I am curious if the two theories that we've heard from Loretta and Seamus are the best ones. Is there any other reason that a food becomes popular all of a sudden? 800-848-WABC. Our friend Andy from Staten Island, the father of our theme song, calling in. Hello, Andy.
What's up, my brother? Frank?
Andy, can I ask you a question before we get your take on burrata? Why do you not take your substantial musical talents and write a Thanksgiving song and then have it played on Thanksgiving? We'll play it. It'll explode in popularity. It'll be the new burrata.
I know. No, I had it all ready to go, and I had problems on building the recording studio. The computer was brand new. Blew up the operating. I just got it back, so I got to get the studio tuned up because I split up with my partner, and he had the studio, so I had to hurry and rush. I have a great song. You have a speaking part in it. It's awesome.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I can't wait to, and maybe we can collaborate on the Thanksgiving song after that.
Yes, yes. We have a part together. It's about JFK and then Martin Luther King had a dream. It's awesome. I have a great part for you. The song is great. Give me just a few days and I'll get to you on that. And I have to leave you my phone number. You have to call me. And I can't do the email and the Gmail right now.
Okay.
My computer, my phone, everything's messed up.
Yeah, so I am a little busy with my wife being 9 months pregnant, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I want to get together and play ping pong with you.
Okay,
I can point out how you see people's weaknesses.
Right, right. Okay. You can give me a lesson or two.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. And I haven't played since I have Parkinson's disease. So that might be interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I might have a shot at beating you if that's the case.
Yeah, yeah. I could be the guy that you beat, and it'll make you play better. But I got some food things for you.
All right. Lay it on me, Andy.
All right. Greek, the lamb, the pita bread sandwich.
What, the gyro? A gyro?
The gyro. Yeah, it was at one place on, like, Bleecker Street. And other than that, you never saw it anywhere, and then it exploded. They're everywhere, Greek.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that. I feel like I enjoyed gyros as a child.
Did you? But I only knew of this one place on Bleecker Street.
All right. Well, I guess we're all a prisoner of our own perspective. Did you have another food, Andy? Because I want to get to some other people before
quickly. I can be. How about Szechuan food? I remember when that came about in the 70s.
Szechuan food. Okay.
It was one, you know, like the first empire that I was. That I knew. It was on like 8th Street and 6th Avenue.
You know, speaking of Asian food, thank you, Andy. You know what did, which I don't think was a big thing with Chinese food years ago, but now you see it all over the place? Crab Rangoon. Have you ever tried Crab Rangoon? It's horrible for you. If you want to try and concoct the worst possible food you can eat, Crab Rangoon would be right up there. Basically, it's cream cheese deep fried and with some crab in it. And they call it, I don't even know if there's crab in it. They call it Crab Rangoon. I don't remember seeing Crab Rangoon on any Chinese menus years ago. I mean, I don't eat that much Chinese. It's not my favorite, but my wife likes it. I much prefer Japanese. See, to me, the order, the hierarchy in Asian food is Thai, Indian, Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean. That is my preferences. You know, maybe Japanese and Indian can switch places. 800-848-WABC, 800-848-9222. We got Martin Phone joining me in mere moments. He's the author of the new book, More Curious Questions, A Smorgasbord of Facts and Trivia. And if you know me, I am a guy that loves smorgasbords and I love trivia. So this book is right up my alley. I haven't read it yet, but I'm a big fan of the writer, Martin Phone. So I'm looking forward to our discussion. Let me say hello to Frank in Queens. Hello, Frank.
Hey, Frank. Frank. This is something that I think back in the 80s, as things from Australia were coming into pop culture, like Men at Work or things like Crocodile Dundee in the movies, but a very disgusting peanut butter type thing called Vegemite.
Vegemite, yes. I remember a Vegemite sandwich was, but I feel like that never really took off.
It never took off in terms, I think, of people actually going out to buy it.
Right.
Because of brand awareness.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't feel like you go into a restaurant these days or a deli or a sandwich shop and there's you don't see Vegemite sandwiches on every, you know, on every menu.
No, you don't. But I'm wondering if anyone's old enough, if they do recall in the 80s, if it was a thing. I'm not sure. I was a kid. It just popped in my head.
All right. Well, fair enough, Frank. I'll let the people decide for themselves. Pam is in Brooklyn. Hello, Pam.
Yes. Hi, Frank. First of all, this is a fun topic, but I wanted to mention that one of the foods that became popular because of health reasons, pushed as healthy food by doctors, was kale.
Kale. I mentioned kale earlier.
Yeah, yeah, but that was pushed as a very healthy food.
Oh, I see, Because I know, but there are a lot of foods that are so-called superfoods that don't achieve kale's level of universal saturation. So, what made kale so special? That's what I don't necessarily get.
I don't either. But the other food I wanted to mention was hummus. Became very popular all of a sudden. Everybody wanted hummus.
Hummus is a great one. It was big in the Middle East. Yeah. It was big in Israel. And it was not something that was nearly as ubiquitous as it was in the United States until recently. So let's take hummus, Pam. What do you think it was that caused the hummus explosion?
I don't know, but I know that restaurants started presenting it as a before meal appetizer.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, they were, you know, you found them in delicatessens and little containers. And I mean, hummus, I like the taste of hummus, but it's not something I go out and buy all the time.
Yeah. See, I love hummus. You know, we have hummus. I love hummus with celery sticks. I love hummus with pita chips. In fact, now I'm not hungry yet, but now I have a sudden craving for hummus. Pam, thank you. Hey, we're going to talk with Martin Fone next. He will be joining us via telephone. He's author of the book More Curious Questions, which is a sequel to a book that explored a lot of interesting questions called 50 Curious Questions. This book will look at 100 questions across a wide range of topics, including nature, natural phenomena, dates and customs, food and drink, and some of life's little mysteries. And we are a show that likes exploring mysteries. Martin Fone joins me next. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
WABC. We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
American Pie drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And then good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die." Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so, how do you believe in rock and roll?
Don McLean, American Pie. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. So when we were doing our Columbus Day show, I was doing different research on Christopher Columbus, and I came across this fascinating, fascinating article exploring where Christopher Columbus's remains were. And it went through all the different theories. I said, I've got to invite this guy on the radio. Lo and behold, he was not only so fascinating, but he wrote a whole book of exploring interesting answers to interesting questions. The book was called 50 Curious Questions. Now he's back with more curiosity and more questions and more answers. The book is called More Curious Questions, A Smorgasbord of Facts and Trivia. I am very pleased to be joined by its author, Martin Fone. Martin, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So, Martin, is this like a Rocky V kind of deal? Is this just your attempt to, you know, capitalize on all the goodwill that you earned with your first book and make some more money with a sequel? Why was there a need for a sequel book like this?
Well, it's the first book, Curious Questions, was well received, and as a result of that, I started writing a regular column for a magazine here in the UK called Country Life. And so over time, I'd grown quite a substantial library of articles. So this book grew out of that. It's a sort of greatest hits, if you will. And during lockdown, with plenty of time on my hands, it seemed a natural process to put it into book form.
All right. Now, you explore a number of interesting questions in this book. Are there 100 in all?
There are, yes.
How did you choose which questions to explore in the book?
It's, well, probably my psychiatrist would be better to answer that. It's those strange, nagging questions that flit through my mind from time to time. I jot them down and then start doing some research. And I've found over the years, I'm now retired, that when I was working, I used to puzzle over things and put them to the back of my mind to be answered and researched at a later date. And now I've got the luxury of having plenty of time. That's what I've done.
The book's called More Curious Questions. Its author is Martin Fone, F-O-N-E. It is available on Amazon and in most places that books are sold. It's available in hardcover, it's available in paperback, and a variety of other formats, including Kindle. You can get an ebook if you want. Martin, we were just talking food and drink earlier. Give us an example of a food or drink question that you've included in the book.
Well, one of the things that fascinates me is why we call foodstuffs what we call them. So, for example, the Garibaldi biscuit, which is a favourite biscuit here in the UK. I don't know whether it is in America.
Not at the moment, but I'm always trying to predict which foreign food trend will be big here. So maybe I'll start stockpiling Garibaldi biscuits.
That's right. Well, it was named after Garibaldi, surprisingly enough. Here in the UK, we rather like rebels and insurgents, providing they don't upset our place in the world. So Garibaldi was a big celebrity in the UK. He visited three times to the UK and was treated like royalty and had a biscuit named after him.
Oh, okay. All right. That
and
is...
Then there's Granny Smith's apple, and which used to be a very big favourite here in the UK, imported from Australia, and it was named after a lady, Granny Smith, who actually developed the cultivar.
Developed what? What did she develop?
The strain of apple.
Ah, I see.
And in fact, every Granny Smith apple tree comes from the original apple tree that she developed.
How about an example, Martin, of one of life's mysteries beyond food and drink that you explore as one of the questions in the book?
All right, well, again, this was a very... particular UK issue, but it may well have happened in the States as well, was at the start of the pandemic, there was a rush people panic buying, particularly toilet paper, toilet tissue. So the natural question was, what did we use before toilet paper? And so I was able to go through the history of toilet paper and some of the things that people used before that, and I believe Sears catalog was extremely popular in the US for that purpose, and there was quite a stink, you might say, when in the 1930s they changed the constituency of the paper, rendering it useless for cleaning one's bottom.
How long has toilet paper been with us?
It was late 19th century.
Interesting. Oh, that's certainly a question that I'd be interested to learn the answer to. You write a little bit about Mark Twain in the book. Why is he such a central player in so many of these curious questions?
Well, he's one of my favorite writers. He's always got a suitable turn of phrase or quote. But I was fascinated to discover that he was also a bit of an inventor. And his most lasting invention, for which he didn't get any money, was the clip which is used on ladies' bras.
Wait a minute. Mark Twain invented the clip that's used on women's brassieres?
Correct. Yeah.
My goodness. Wow.
But unfortunately, he didn't get any money for that. But I'm sure he would have appreciated the irony.
I'm sure you're right. You also deal with a lot of things related to science and nature. For instance, the snowflake. You explore the question of how fast a snowflake travels. I must confess, I never thought about it, but now I find myself thinking about it. How fast does a snowflake travel?
Well, not as fast as you would imagine. Obviously, it depends on wind conditions, but it floats rather gracefully at about 4 to 8 miles an hour down to the ground. And the fascinating thing, therefore, is that the cloud from which it fell has long since disappeared by the time you see it.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. So are most of the questions that are in this book and the answers and the stories that you go into, are most of them pretty lighthearted? It seems like the tone in which this book is written is certainly pretty lighthearted.
Yes. Well, that's what I aim for. It's obviously down to the reader to determine whether I've succeeded or not. But my books are very fact heavy, and so to leaven the mix, I put in a little bit of humor, a bit of wordplay, etc., etc. So it's not like a school textbook, but it's I aim to put a smile on the reader's face, as well as providing them with some facts that they may find useful to astound their friends at the bar or at a dinner party.
Well, and you do a great job with that. Give us one other piece of trivia that that folks may find useful at a bar or a dinner party. Something that the person they're talking to probably wouldn't know, but that once you know, you can impress them with this knowledge.
Well, that's a bit of a challenge there. I think one of the areas that I do like to explore is common phrases. So things like what is a wild goose chase, and what I discovered was that the origin of that phrase wasn't someone trying to catch a wild goose, but was a form of horse race that was practiced in the UK in the 17th century. where horses were lined up and set off. And then after a certain distance, there would be a leading horse, and all the other horses had to follow it directly behind it, so representing the way that geese fly in the sky.
Interesting.
And the winner of the race was the rider who had got ahead of the field by a determined distance. So the race was originally of no fixed distance nor duration. There had to be certain conditions met for a winner. So it was originally the phrase was there to describe something that was unclear, uncertain. And then over time, the more literal sense of the phrase took over.
And we're talking with Martin Fone. Check out his new book, More Curious Questions. You do get into a bit about how COVID has changed society. We've seen a surge in keeping pets. We've seen a surge in solving jigsaw puzzles, even a surge in cardboard boxes. Is all of that just a reflection of people being stuck at home, or is there more to it?
I think it's a reflection of people being stuck at home in the main. I mean, I didn't consciously set out to write a book that dealt with trends initiated by the COVID pandemic, but as I sifted through the material, it was quite obvious that that was an underlying theme, because it's impacted our lives, certainly here in the UK, and I guess in the US as well.
One of the things that we heard a lot about a year ago was that the handshake might be on the ropes and the handshake might be gone. What does your research indicate about the future of the handshake and how people will greet one another in a post-COVID world?
Yeah, so that's another interesting question. I mean, being an Englishman, of course, a handshake was the way that I always greeted people. But as we're becoming more conscious of hygiene and the spread of germs and all that sort of thing, I can't recall the last time I shook anyone by the hand. So one then has to start looking for alternative forms of greeting. And I'm of an age where an elbow bump or a fist bump doesn't look terribly appropriate. So I'm rather attracted by the Indian form of greeting, the slight bow of the head.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. That's you also don't have to worry about an overly aggressive person trying to crush your hand to show what a firm handshake he has.
That's right.
Well, Martin, I want to wish you the best of luck with the book. The book's called More Curious Questions, a smorgasbord of facts and trivia. It's available wherever books are sold. Appreciate you taking the time this morning, Martin.
That's great, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Let's do it again soon. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight.
You're hearing things
on 77 WABC.
We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now here's Frank Morano.
You know you make me wanna
don't
kick my heels up and
don't
do my hands up and
don't
throw my head back and
don't
come on.
Brothers, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. So I was hanging out with Andrew Giuliani on election night, and I am strongly considering supporting Andrew Giuliani for governor. I think if I support a Republican, it will be Andrew Giuliani. But we'll see. I could support a Democrat. I could support an independent. We'll see. But I like Andrew very much, and I've only met him a few times, interviewed him a couple of times, and I'm always impressed with him. And, you know, we're hanging out on election night. We're talking, and I am not exactly a fashionista. I am not exactly a trendsetter. I spend – this is not a joke. This is not hyperbole. I spend about 70 or 80% of my non-work waking hours in a bathrobe and pajama pants. So that is the attire that I am most comfortable in. But one aspect of my fashion style that you will never see me without is a lapel pin. I love lapel pins. I've got a big collection of lapel pins. I like rare lapel pins. I like all sorts of different American flag lapel pins. I just love lapel pins. Sometimes you'll see me wearing a big American flag. Sometimes you'll see me wearing an American flag that's in the shape of the United States. Sometimes you'll see me wearing the New York State flag. Sometimes you'll see me wearing a flag of New York and New Jersey. Sometimes you'll see me wearing a WABC lapel pin. Sometimes you'll see me wearing, Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock. Sometimes you'll see me wearing a Breaking Bad lapel pin. I have a Union lapel pin. I have for when I'm in New Jersey, New York and New Jersey flag lapel pins. I have an I Love New York lapel pin. I'm very proud of my collection of lapel pins. And whenever people are always looking for a gift to give me, I always steer them towards lapel pins. But I also have developed my own sort of code that I live by, which is if anybody ever a man, mostly, but even a woman, as long as they have a sports jacket or something. If anybody ever compliments me on a lapel pin and they're wearing a blazer or a suit jacket or a sports jacket that has a lapel, I will immediately take off my lapel pin and give it to them. That is the code that I've now lived by. And this says, caused me to part with a number of lapel pins. I had an American flag lapel pin from the West Wing of the White House from the Secret Service, basically. And our president, Chad, hanging Chad Lopez, he complimented me on this lapel pin. I took it off. I gave it to him. Now he wears it all the time. I have not been able to replace that lapel pin because it's so rare. So the other day, I am wearing a lapel pin that I was quite fond of. It's the flag of New York City, but it was really well made, really beautiful material. I don't know what specific type of metal it was made from, but it was not a cheap looking lapel pin. So Andrew Giuliani compliments me on my lapel pin. So I do what I always do in the circumstances. I take it off. I give it to him. Here you go. And he was about to take off his lapel pin and give it to me, but he had just kind of a plain old regular American flag, the kind of which that I have 30, maybe 40. So I said, no, it's okay. It's okay. I said, when you're governor, get me a New York State flag lapel pin. So now I actually, and I know this is pretty sick, but I'm actually rooting for him to get elected much more than I was, so that I could get some sort of a neat gubernatorial lapel pin. I'm not even joking a little bit. I've been thinking about this all weekend. I've been devising all sorts of different scenarios in which Andrew Giuliani can get elected so that he can give me a gubernatorial lapel pin of some sort. So I gave him my New York City flag. I ordered another one from the internet, and I'm hoping that that it looks like and is similar to the one that I had, because I've gotten other New York City lapel pins that pale in comparison to the one they I gave Andrew. This was really one of my favorite lapel pins. So I hope he appreciates it. And even more so, I hope he gets elected. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. You can email me. Frank.Morano at WABCRadio.com. That's Frank.Morano at WABCRadio.com. We are going to be reading your best emails tomorrow, and you can even send us some snail mail. You can send us mail at P.O. Box 1777, New York, New York, 10163. Just send it to my attention. Attention, Frank Morano. P.O. Box 1777, New York, New York, 10163. We are on Facebook. I post a lot of interesting things on Facebook. Facebook.com/MoranoFan. Articles, videos, links to other interesting things, just provocative questions. So, you know, some of the provocative questions that I ask on the radio, sometimes I workshop them in the Facebook community. So if you're not following me on Facebook, please be so good as to do so. And if you are on Facebook, you can even join our social media Facebook community. Just search Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. People commenting about different aspects of the show. Right now, people are talking about Halloween. People are talking about Thanksgiving. People are talking about different foods and their popularity. So you're welcome to comment. People dissecting comments from last week. So if you want to give your review of different aspects of the show, that's the place to do it. If you want to engage with listeners about what we're doing on the show, that's the place to do it. If you have questions about things that I've done on the show or that the guests have talked about, that's the place to do it. Just search M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. Hey, commendations coming up next. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morrow, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. If you want to comment on anything we are doing, just give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. You know, part of me wants to comment on the infrastructure situation because I know a lot of conservatives are upset with the Republicans that voted for this infrastructure bill, including my member of Congress, Nicole Malliotakis. I actually think she did the right thing, and I think all 13 of them did the right thing. And there's a reason 6 of the 13 are from New York and New Jersey, because New York and New Jersey stand to benefit enormously by this infrastructure bill. But I decided I'm not going to talk about it because I don't feel like getting yelled at for 40 minutes about what a communist I am. So I'm going to hold off on that. Maybe tomorrow we'll revisit that or we'll invite Nicole to come on this show. I invited her to come on today, but the hours were tough. So we'll see. Now, I do want to tell you, coming up in a half hour, we're going to talk with Stephen Greenhut. Stephen Greenhut wrote an interesting piece that I read over the weekend. Headline, "Politics is rotting brains and making everyone mad." And it's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. So we're going to get into it. I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page if you want to read it in advance of our discussion, Facebook.com/MoranoFan. I want to thank Ellen for correcting me on quinoa. I thought quinoa was a grain. Apparently it's not. It's a seed. So I know clearly as much about quinoa as I do about when to spring ahead and when to fall back. But I do find the behavior of Nicole Malliotakis and these 12 other rebel Republicans quite commendable. And maybe if they continue this kind of behavior, they could one day make this list.
The Other Side of Midnight presents commendations.
Let me begin with Jason Feldman. Hey, you know that great Halloween parade that we had in the Village last week? You know why we had it? Because Jason Feldman, who's a big fan of the Halloween parade in the village, and a guy who was sorry that we lost it last year. He made a $150,000 donation to save the parade. So if you enjoyed the parade, watching it on television, watching it on the street, or marching in it, the person you have to thank for that is Jason Feldman. Congratulations on your commendation, Jason Feldman, and thank you. On behalf of a grateful city, we appreciate you. I must also congratulate and commend the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves, I hate rooting for the Braves as a longtime Met fan, but they are the baseball champions of the world, and it's only fitting that in a year where they took the All-Star game out of Atlanta because of this bizarre voting bill that they had there, on a year that it was supposed to pay tribute to Hank Aaron, number 44, one of the greatest hitters, one of the greatest baseball players, one of the greatest people of all time, it seems apropos that the Braves would win it this year. If there was ever going to be a year that I'd root for the Braves, it's this year. And in an era where political correctness just goes crazy and has gotten out of control, there was something sort of refreshing about seeing the fans and the Trumps alike doing that tomahawk chop. So congratulations to the Atlanta Braves. I do commend you. I must also commend Bayonne Mayor Jimmy Davis. This guy is really something. He is being credited with helping police pursue a Newark man. You knew it wasn't going to be a Bayonne man. A Newark man who stole a woman's purse in the Costco parking lot. So this fellow, Pedro Enrique, as well as an accomplice of his, were charged with robbery and endangering an injured person. And evidently, Jimmy Davis, the mayor of Bayonne, sees this incident where these two men exit their vehicle and they attempt to take possession of a woman's purse from a shopping cart. So the victim and her friend quickly grab the purse in an attempt to regain possession of it, and a struggle ensued. So the two were eventually pushed away as, you know, this escalates. The victim, they were being dragged. Victim suffered head and facial injuries, as well as lacerations to her arms. And so driving in his vehicle with Office of Emergency Management Coordinator Eduardo Jr. Ferrante and Bayonne Fire Department Chief Keith Weaver, almost immediately following the description broadcast, Bayonne Mayor James Davis advised a police dispatch that he had heard the description of the suspect's vehicle and was currently behind the vehicle in the area of Route 185 and Linden Avenue. So the guy, the mayor, started giving chase to the vehicle. He started following the vehicle as he's phoning it in to police. So he follows the vehicle as he awaits the Bayonne police to respond to his location while stopped at a red traffic light. So as the light turned green, and after observing the arrival of multiple Bayonne police units, the mayor exits his vehicle and attempts to engage the driver. So the driver sees the police, he exits the vehicle, and starts running away on foot. So they were unable to get away, and they were taken into custody without incident. You know, we've done this story before, just recently. What do you do if you see a crime? Well, I think the mayor behaved perfectly here. You follow these guys, you don't let them out of your sight, and you call the cops. Good for Mayor Jimmy Davis. I don't know anything about Jimmy Davis, but I like Bayonne a lot. Got a great bakery there, Jadicki's. And if I lived in Bayonne, I'd probably consider voting for this fellow. So good for you, Jimmy Davis. I do commend you. I must also commend all of the New Yorkers that participated, not only New Yorkers, excuse me, all of the people that participated in the New York City Marathon. So I want to commend not just the winners, the both Kenyans, male and female, Albert Correa, who finished with 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 22 seconds. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? And Perez Jipercher, who was the winner of the women's race at 2 hours and 22 minutes. Can you imagine doing 26.2 miles in 2 hours and 8 minutes? I mean, these people have rockets on their shoes. But so I not only want to commend them, but the thousands of other people that ran in this contest. Just to be able to finish a marathon is very, very challenging. It's very, very difficult. And all of you that did so really ought to be proud of yourselves. But I also want to give a commendation to everybody that volunteered in the marathon. I know my sister Claudia volunteered. I think my brother Alexander volunteered as well. And these marathons do not take place without the help of many, many, many volunteers. And I think it's a great thing. I believe this was the 50th anniversary of the New York City Marathon. And this is one of the great things that makes New York, New York. And thank you to everybody that participated one way or another, or even if you just watched. Because if people stop watching, ultimately, they'd stop doing it. I want to commend Newark. Newark, the city of Newark in New Jersey, has now removed and replaced 20,000 poison water pipes. This is great. So this new pipe, they had these old pipes that were dangerous. That's the only way to describe them. And these pipes were carrying water and potentially a poison to a small apartment building. So the new pipe is copper. The old one was lined with lead. Now, let me ask you, do you want lead in your water? The answer should be easy. No. Copper. So this was, the water service line was one of more than 20,000 made with this toxic metal, lead, that the city began replacing 2 years ago amidst the public outrage over revelations of high lead levels in tap water in schools and homes. Now, less than 3 years after this work begun, this replacement project, getting rid of all these poison pipes, is complete. So they thought this was going to take 10 years. They did it in 3. When was the last time a city government did A, the right thing, and B, 7 years ahead of schedule? I mean, this is incredible. Good for you, City of Newark, showing that competence is still possible in municipal government. I want to commend the toys that made the National Toy Hall of Fame. 3 inductees this year, including one of my favorites. So the National Toy Hall of Fame inducted American Girl dolls. Okay, not really something I ever played with. They inducted the board game Risk, which is one of my favorites. And then lastly, they inducted Sand. Yes, Sand. These honorees were unveiled during a ceremony at the Strong National Museum of Play in Rochester, New York. They were chosen from a field of 12 candidates and beat out other classic toys like Battleship, Billiards, and Cabbage Patch Kids. I'm surprised the American Girl doll beat out the Cabbage Patch Kids. But I'm not going to quibble with the National Toy Hall of Fame. And you know, if you listen to this show, that I am fond of cheese. That's why this article from CNN.com struck me as quite interesting. They have interviewed a whole bunch of dietitians and nutritionists, and they came up with what the healthiest cheese is. Believe it or not, there are actually a number of cheeses that are quite healthy. It's not great for weight management, but it can be a great source of protein. It's a good alternative to protein that's derived from animal flesh. It contains all the essential amino acids that the body needs but can't synthesize on its own. It's a complete protein. So they explored which cheese is the healthiest. And there are a number of cheeses that are healthy in different ways. For instance, Gouda, Pecorino, Parmesan, all are healthy options when consumed in moderation. Because they contain less water and are more concentrated, hard cheeses are going to be higher in calcium. However, because they're more concentrated, harder cheeses also might have a higher sodium content than softer ones. But it looks like the experts believe the champion of cheese, at least when it comes to healthy cheese, is ricotta. I absolutely love ricotta. I could eat it just, and not I could, I do frequently eat it right out of the container. It has a high concentration of whey protein, which is easily absorbed by the body. It's one of the most absorbable forms of protein, and it contains a very wide range of amino acids. So they say ricotta is the best bet for someone looking to build muscle, build strength, while also losing fat and weight. It's almost, it has a similar caloric value to cottage cheese. You know, cottage cheese is a very healthy cheese, but in a lot of ways, ricotta is actually a healthier alternative than cottage cheese. I love ricotta. I put it on everything, and it's really a great cheese, and I was happy to see it finally recognized. And I am pleased to give accommodation to ricotta. I want to commend Gus the Labrador. Gus is a dog who celebrated his birthday. And 3 days ago, all of his neighbors in Tennessee gathered for this dog, Gus, this Labrador, his second birthday. Why? Because this dog is a hero. Several weeks ago, Gus's normally quiet neighborhood was the target of a suspected burglar. And you heard, they heard gunshots in the neighborhood around 10:45 in the morning. The shot was fired at Gus, this poor dog. He was shot in the head above his eye, but the vet staff said that it traveled through his ear canal and exited through his neck. Neighbors believe that Gus, listen to this, Gus broke through his electric fence and chased the suspect away. He eventually made his way to one person's house several blocks away. Then all of a sudden, the dog turns to this fellow, Philip. And this guy, Philip, sees a bullet hole in his head. And he knew something bad happened. Now, the suspected burglar is behind bars. And Gus is turning two. So I would agree this is a life worth celebrating. He's a neighborhood hero. They call him Super Dog. And they say this is a super dog that's brought a neighborhood together and kept the families of this neighborhood safe. So good for you, Gus. Way to track down bad guys. Way to be brave. Way to do the right thing. I also want to commend Dr. Caitlin Carrico. This is a very special woman, and she has been named the Glamour magazine 2021 Woman of the Year. She's a Hungarian-American biochemist and pioneer in the field of immunology who actually invented mRNA pharmaceutical technology. Why is that so important? Well, if you've gotten the Pfizer vaccine or the Moderna vaccine and not been hospitalized, you can thank Dr. Caitlin Carrico. And I think this is a very, very worthy recipient of the Glamour Magazine 2021 Woman of the Year. She seems like a great lady and certainly a very smart lady. I must also commend Yuengling. Yes, Yuengling, the beer. They gave, you know, it was reported that this woman who just turned 106 years old, her name is Margaret DeLulo. She drinks a Yuengling beer every day. And she's pretty soon going to be 107. So Yuengling, which calls itself the oldest brewery in America, after they came here, after David Yuengling arrived here from Germany in 1829, they made a special delivery to this woman who just might be the oldest beer drinker in America. They drove up with a big truck to her house to deliver an early birthday gift of 20 cases of her favorite beverage. So she is attributing her longevity to drinking a can of Yuengling Lager every day. Now she has a free stash for the next 480 days. Good for her. I hope she lives another 15, 20 years or however long. But and good for Yuengling. I'm giving a commendation to Yuengling. That's a nice thing. Yuengling beer. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. We're going to talk with Stephen Greenhunt next. He'll tell you how you can engage in politics and not want to kill your neighbors. Fascinating column. I've linked to it on my Facebook page if you want to read it. Facebook.com/MORANOFAN. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
WABC. When you support City Harvest, you do more than just provide hundreds of millions of pounds of food to millions of hungry New Yorkers. You feed hope for a kid up in Parkchester. You feed confidence for a first-in-her-family Queens College freshman. You feed community for folks in Canarsie Park. You feed compassion for retired Staten Island nurses who continue to serve. You feed strength for office workers in Manhattan. When you support City Harvest, you feed good. Support us at cityharvest.org.
Tonight at 10 p.m., feisty, fearless, and fair. She's an Emmy-winning journalist from the White House to war zones, telling all sides of the story, talking to the biggest names, covering the biggest stories. She's Rita Cosby.
You have to fight, and you have to believe in what you have and believe in your country.
Tonight, listen to The Rita Cosby Show, weeknights at 10 on 77 WABC. Start your morning with Frank Morano on 77 WABC.
Get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Get out in that kitchen and rattle those pots and pans. Well, load my breakfast, cause I'm a hungry man. I said, shake, rattle and roll. 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 Well, you never do nothing.
Bill Haley and the Comets singing Shake, Rattle and Roll. A version probably not as well known as the Elvis Presley version, but still quite catchy. Hey, something that I would love to see catch on is the column that I read over the weekend as a discussion point for how to address the very real problems that it describes. The headline of the column that I read, "Politics is rotting brains and making everyone mad." That is certainly what I have observed. Wherever I go, whether I'm at a cocktail party or whether I'm walking down the street or whether I'm just trying to do a radio show and be fun and entertaining, I am deluged with people that want to scream about politics. I am amazed at how angry people get about politics. And this is not a left-wing thing. This is not a right-wing thing. I see it across the political spectrum. Well, someone that had an interesting thought as to how to address this was Stephen Greenhut. He is the Western Region Director for the R Street Institute and a former California columnist for the Union Tribune. Stephen, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I really enjoyed your column. I thought it was quite thought-provoking. And I'm wondering if you can explain to folks, what do you think is wrong with politics and society today? What's the problem that's in need of solving?
Well, yeah, it just seems like, the politicization of everything. So like you just pointed out, it seems like you can't go anywhere or do anything. There's no safe space, you know, to use the little social justice cliche, but there's no space away from politics, right? So, I mean, I've been writing about politics. I write for the Orange County Register. I've been writing a newspaper column for 30 years. And I used to always get emails. Well, it wasn't emails then, but you'd get contacted from readers. And there was some sort of debate and people would disagree. Now, like, everything I get is angry. It's incredible. And I see it everywhere. I live in a small town. You go on our little Facebook page. And people want to argue about politics. People want to argue everywhere. So I don't know what is wrong other than everyone seems to view politics as the be-all and end-all. And I think the stakes seem so high. I don't really think they are as high as people think they are. But people think the stakes are high. And as I pointed out in my column, there's these articles that were written on the run up to the last couple of elections. That just, it makes it a dire situation.
Right.
The Flight 93 election. If we don't stop Hillary Clinton, it's all going to crash and burn in a field. And the other side does the same thing. So I don't know how we ratchet it down.
Now, before we get into how we ratchet it down, we're talking with Stephen Greenhut. You can read this column on my Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan. How did we get here? In your view, when did this start, this level of anger? Because I see it the same way from articles or comments that I post on social media that I think are pretty benign. And ultimately, it always seems to delve down into a screaming match. And it's not enough that you can disagree with people. You have to destroy them. How did we get to a place where the friendly opposition has become political warfare?
Yeah, I mean, it's destroy and humiliate. I mean, there's all, you know, it's the human condition. People have always, there have always been angry people, but it's the level of anger. And what I kind of talk about in the article, and I'm a journalist. I haven't analyzed when anything has actually started happening, just my observations. And I think the government has gotten a lot bigger. I mean, I'm a libertarian, so I'm not hiding that. I think our government's too big. And I think that's part of the problem, right? That the government is perceived by both sides as it could take everything away, right? And I think the whole coronavirus restrictions and things have gotten a lot of people upset. And but you know, we're living in one of the nicest countries the world's ever known. We're in a very affluent people. It's just hard to understand why we're all so angry all the time. I referred to a article that I read about Kalispell, Montana, which is a lovely little town. My son-in-law is from there. It's one of the prettiest places on earth, and people are tearing each other's throats out there. They're angry at everything, and they're screaming at each other. And the mayor says the town's going through a divorce. You think how sad that is, right? If we I was talking to my son-in-law because he grew up there, and he said, "Yeah, this seems to be true," and he doesn't remember it. He's in his around early 30s. He doesn't remember it that way growing up, but it's been in the last few years. It's really
sad. So, you believe that part of the reason that we're in such a place, part of the reason that every American, seemingly, at least every politically active American, seems to think that the stakes of every election are so dire is because government has acquired too much power over the years?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, if in the ideal libertarian world, and I really am nonpartisan. I think both parties are crazy, and I'm not, and I don't think either side wants limited government. Certainly not the Republicans anymore, even though they use that language, and the Democrats don't, of course. But think about it. The analogy I used to use was let's say on my block on Sunday morning, we all go to the church of our choice, right? We don't argue about religion or church choices because we all just go where we want. It doesn't matter. If we all voted on where we all had to go, it would be a knockdown, drag out fight, right? It would lead to violence probably, right? So, it's a silly analogy, but you see my point is if things that are so fundamental to us are decided by government, like with the school, we see all these battles at school districts. If we had less government involvement in schools and people had more choice and could just send their kids where they wanted to go, we wouldn't have to fight with our neighbors as much about what's being taught in the schools. And I think that's, I think that's the way it is in so many areas of life. When government, does so much, we feel like we have to take control of that government. And, one of the things that I'm concerned about is, at least on the right, conservatives used to talk about limiting government. And I quote one, prominent conservative, and he's just typical of what I'm hearing now. They're arguing now that we shouldn't work to maintain the constitutional principles of limiting government. We should just work to take power. and you know, essentially impose our view of the world or their view of the world on everyone else. So that means that every battle, every debate becomes a knockdown, drag-out fight over who controls the levers of power so that we can impose our views, whoever our is, on the other side. And that's leading to it. So that's my point, that the more government does, the more we get a sense that we better be in control or they're going to force their views on us.
So you write that it really shouldn't matter that much who's elected because the government shouldn't have that much control over varying aspects of your life. So do you think the reason people are getting so upset now is because the government has become more powerful, or is it the perception that the government has become so powerful?
Yeah, I think over the years it has clearly become more powerful, and I think that's a fundamental problem because the government can do so much. But I also think there's a perception, and I don't think the government in the last few years has gotten, you know, any more power. It's a trajectory that's been going on for probably since the ink was dry on the Constitution. So this is nothing new. But culturally, I think there's this fear that in the last few years that we're seeing. So I think you pointed out correctly that there's this perception of it. And I think some of that perception is wrong. I don't think things have gotten, that much worse in the last few years.
It's so disheartening. I would never allow who my congressman is, who the governor is, who the president is, to dictate my level of happiness and contentment. Because if you look at what people actually get contentment and satisfaction out of, it's spending time with their family, spending time with friends, having productive hobbies or hobbies that they really enjoy. And none of that is affected, for the most part, by anybody that's elected to anything.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's right. I mean, I've attended as a reporter, I've attended so many council meetings and boards of supervisor meetings, and such little happens at those meetings that are really affect our lives directly. And the fact that we're, you know, families are torn apart. I've seen it within my own, family.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And over somebody we don't know. And really, it's just crazy to allow family relationships to collapse over your view about a president or a former president.
100%. I've talked about this before. I voted for Donald Trump twice, and I was and I defended some of his policies early in his administration. And a friend of mine, who had been a friend of mine since college, said essentially that after hearing me, she didn't think we could be friends anymore. And I am still just blown away by this, the fact that this person who was an incredibly close friend would choose to end a relationship that over some political disagreement. I just cannot fathom that. And I hear about this now all the time. So, Stephen, what is the solution? It doesn't seem like government is going to be relinquishing any of the powers that they've accumulated over the years. Is there anything else that can be done to keep people from not wanting to kill each other?
Yeah, it's hard to come up with solutions, right? Because as a reporter, a journalist, columnist, I've been criticizing government officials, presidents, going back since I started, and I used to just criticize. I've criticized everyone. And now whenever I criticize Donald Trump or Joe Biden, it's the same thing. I'm told I have to pick a side. No, I don't have to pick a side. I'm allowed to criticize. I have a set of principles that I apply.
Criticize or praise, right?
Or praise, right. I've done both. So anyway, the point is we've selected these sides, and I think the only thing we could do is for individually to refuse to be part of a tribe and just associate with people. And I have a friend of mine who we argue about politics, but we're friends, and it doesn't matter. We still get, just refuse to allow your relationships to get destroyed over this. I think at a personal level, that's all we can do, because I don't see anything, societally that could be done. I don't blame social media for it. A lot of people do. I mean, it certainly you know, advances this sort of debate, but I still don't think the medium is the problem.
Well,
I think the
that's very interesting, and that's you've anticipated exactly where I was going next. Social media, Facebook, Twitter, and the like, they have these algorithms where the more polarizing the content and the stronger the reaction, be it positive or negative, that it gets from commenters who see that content, the more it pops up on other people's news feeds. So do these social media companies at least bear a little bit of responsibility for the current climate when they're rewarding incendiary rhetoric on all sides of the political equation?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, it makes it worse. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't. It's just that talk radio makes it worse, right? My business, newspaper business, makes it worse. Political parties make it worse. You know, you're the calmest talk radio host I've listened to, right? I mean, a lot of the you've heard some of the hosts out there. They seem to be just churning the pot, and I see it on the newspaper on the editorial pages. And so we're to blame. You know, sure, all these different mediums, you know, amplify the problem. But the problem is us. And we've got to stop it. Right. We've got to knock it off and stop viewing everybody as enemies and just start rebuilding our relationships. I mean, we could even go deeper and look at, has something happened within our communities where we're disconnected at a personal level? You know, when I grew up, and not trying to, I'm in my 60s now, I'm not trying to, there were no glory days of anything, but I do remember growing up in a neighborhood and knowing most of the people in the neighborhood. And I think a lot of our contacts now are not within our neighborhood, but it's more self-selected, and people are connected through social media, through other means, through like interests. So, you know, people will, I know people who are just, most of their friends are come from social media because they're all interested in the same thing. And it's often politics as opposed to being associated with our neighbors. You know, I have a neighbor who we don't agree on anything and we're great friends because we've lived next door to each
sure,
other.
Sure, as it should be, right? As it should be.
Right. So it's not self-selecting, but if I just went and decided to get together with a bunch of libertarians on social media, and those were going to be my whole group of friends, we would just beat each other into a frenzy. But sometimes, you know, when I go to church, I meet people who don't think like me at all, but we're there together. My neighbors, we don't always think the same way, but we're together, and we've learned to care about each other because we're put in that place. And maybe there's less of that going on in society, but I'm not a sociologist, so I'm not sure.
So I realize you may not be a sociologist or a historian, but you are a pretty smart guy. If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Stephen Greenhut. He's the Western Regional Director for the R Street Institute, and he wrote a fascinating column about how we can avoid having politics rot our brains and make everyone mad. I've linked to it on my Facebook page, facebook.com/MorenoFam. I'm wondering if maybe you and I, given the anecdotal examples that we've observed and we're citing, are viewing the current situation too harshly. If you go back, 60 years ago or so, there were people having race riots in the street, assassinating presidents, assassinating civil rights leaders because there was so much division in the country. If you go back 100 years before that, there was a civil war, which remains the bloodiest war that any American has ever participated in. Is it possible that in the grand scheme of things, through the prism of history, that maybe things aren't as bad now as we think they are?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you start, looking at some of those things like the Tulsa race riots weren't really race riots. It was an attack by the white community on a neighborhood. And you pointed out, you know, the Civil War and all the sorts of the civil unrest we've had over the years are far worse than what we've seen. But I do think in my lifetime, the kind of, broken civil discourse, it's gotten worse to me. It looks worse to me than what I've seen in my adult lifetime. But maybe historically, people aren't killing each other. But I don't know, if it continues down this way, it's hard. It's easy to see where it could lead to some of that.
So it seems like the first place to start, if people want to get off this anger-driven carousel of political infighting, the first place to start is for individuals to make the decision not to throw away relationships based on political disagreement. Is that a fair start?
I think so. The other thing is, you know, what's going on in our lives? Do something other than thinking about politics.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, a few months ago, I took up motorcycle riding. So instead of sitting around thinking about politics, I just go take a ride, which is, anyway, it's just dumb, but it's kind of things you do. Or gardening. My wife says, you know, just do something else and think about something else. And this is where maybe, you know, I think your point about the, you know, the social media is just, I think people are addicted to it and they spend hours on it. And if you're just sitting there reading what people are posting, you know, I was just on waiting for the show and I saw some idiotic thing that somebody posted and you get angry and kind of teach yourself to just not make a comment and just think about something else, do something else, read a book.
Amen, Stephen. Well, it's a great column, and I hope a lot of people listen to you, and I hope we can get to a place where civility is not something that we read about in a history book, but can experience on a daily basis. Thank you for writing this, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things.
On 77 WABC. Frank Moreno. 77 WABC.
Sometimes I want. The song, the melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. That's Frank Sinatra singing Stardust, a terrific, terrific song. By the way, if you have not yet listened to Joe Piscopo's Ramsey Mazda Sundays with Sinatra show, you've got to check it out. It's on every Sunday night from 6 to 9 p.m. He does a wonderful job, and so does Dina Martin. I didn't get to hear Joe's show yesterday because I was out to dinner with my mom, and then I chose to take a nap instead. But I am going to try and catch up on the podcast because I'm a big fan of Joe's, and he does a wonderful job talking about Sinatra. And Dina Martin does a great job playing some of her father's songs and talking about, you know, her father's life and his career. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We're on Twitter as well, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. I'll tell you, one of the things that I really look forward to on the weekend, but especially on a Sunday, is getting the newspaper, spending some time opening a brand new newspaper, diving into it, seeing what interests me on page by page. And the reason I like the old-fashioned newspaper instead of just reading these email newsletters, which I do get, and instead of just reading news online, is because I always discover something new. I always end up reading an article or learning more about a subject or having my curiosity piqued on a subject that I would never think to click on an article about. But when you flip in the newspaper pages, you see an article there, and it's great. And one of the great gifts my mother gave me, I think for my birthday or Christmas or something one year, is she subscribed me on Sunday to the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the New York Daily News, the New York Post, and the Staten Island Advance. So there's nothing I enjoy more than on a Sunday taking a couple of hours while my wife and I are having coffee. If it's nice out, maybe we'll sit in our backyard or on our front porch and going through the newspapers. I absolutely love it. Meantime, though, yesterday...
You know what really grinds my gears?
I don't think the Times and the Wall Street Journal came. And I have to say, it really did sort of ruin my day. I went out this morning, right after we did the Cats Roundtable. I went out and I collected all the newspapers that were in front of our house and I brought them in to read later. Post was there. Daily News was there. Staten Island Advance was there. I did not see the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. Is it possible that I brought it in and misplaced it? Maybe. But my wife and I spent a long time last night looking for these newspapers, and I couldn't find it anywhere. And I have to tell you, it was incredibly irksome. So I don't know if they didn't come. I don't know if somebody stole my newspapers. I can't imagine that's the case. But it really... Totally, you have one level of expectations for how you hope your Sunday will go, and then that is met by reality, and it doesn't go that way. So that was my, again, may that be the worst problem I experience all month, but it was really irritating. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Harris is in Manhattan. Hello, Harris.
Hello, Frank. Sorry to hear about your newspapers.
Me too. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, about politics and how we're tearing each other apart, I think it's inevitable. I think we are religious by nature, tribalist by nature. I think we evolved that way. I believe in evolutionary psychology, which explains a lot of our behavior. It's a reason why we get hungry, because natural selection. The people who didn't have much of an appetite many years ago didn't eat much, and they didn't carry on their genes. So a lot of things spring from that, and tribalism is part of that. And there was a guy on the Reverend the Rabbi yesterday morning. This guy is a rabbi and has a PhD in political science.
Oh, who was it? I didn't catch
his name. Shiner, Scheinbaum, or something like that.
Talking about Hank Shinecoff?
Sounds really
familiar. Yeah, well, that would fit that description, yes.
He was unbelievable. He was rattling off so many facts. I wish I could go back and write down. If there's a podcast, I might do that. He said so many things. He said, what we don't have is, yes, we are tribal. What we don't have, what we have no longer is something in the middle that we all watch, such as television. It was the great middle ground.
Harris, I was going to go into this with Stephen Greenhut. You're absolutely right. Years ago, whoever people voted for, they all watched Walter Cronkite give them the news, and they all spent their Sunday evening listening to or watching Ed Sullivan introduce variety acts. There was some common ground. Everybody looked up and saw that the sky was blue. Now we're at an era where everyone can get whatever niche information that caters to their particular political viewpoint. We're now in an era where people can't even agree that 2 + 2 = 4.
Right. That's a huge factor. And I think the problem is the extremes on both sides, the extreme left and the extreme right. If sort of the country could agree on coming towards the middle and avoid those extremes, because they're inflammatory. So you've got the far left, which is, yes, the communists, and the far right, which is, yes, white supremacists. And maybe there's a little tribe of them, the Tiki people, Tiki Torch people we saw in Charlottesville. Maybe they really do exist, but I don't think they're a huge factor. So if we could draw a circle and say, okay, in the circle is all the good stuff, and on the fringes that we don't want to have affect us are put them outside the circle, and let's marginalize those things instead of marginalizing you know, the word marginalized is, oh, people are marginalized now. No, let's marginalize these radical theories that are tearing us apart and not give them any credit. And the problem is the internet, and you can find anything on the internet, and the tribalism lives on the internet. It's engendered by the internet because you can find a radical opinion on anything. I happen to, you know, I'm on the conservative side. I have watched these videos by this guy, Yuri Bezmenov, Bezmenov. Fascinating. The guy is evidently, he's a former KGB agent who defected. And now he's warning the West about ideological subversion. And you watch these 5-minute videos. It's unbelievable. It's as though he was predicting what's happening right now, that, yes, it takes a whole generation. This guy talks with a Russian accent. It's phenomenal. It takes one generation to transform one generation of students by these crazy radical professors who have infested the universities. And there are 4 steps to take over, and there are, it's unbelievable. Now, I happen to believe that. I'm convinced that that's what's happening. And perhaps Russia and China are going to band together and take us over. An EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, would be the first thing. It wouldn't be a traditional war that we, you know, we wouldn't be invaded. It would be our power grid would be shut off as the first attack.
Well, I mean, that could certainly happen, but I feel like that's where we're now conflating 2 different issues, the national security implications of an EMP and the divisions that are already existing within our country. But I agree with, and thank you for the call, I agree with the majority of what Harris said. Here's where I part company slightly from Harris. First of all, he ascribed being ultra right wing as white supremacist. I don't think white supremacists have a political ideology. I think when you've made the decision to hate another ethnic group, that's not left or right. You're just a racist. You're just a racist. Now, the other reason, like what he said and what Hank Shinkoff has said and Alan Dershowitz said and even John Katsimatidis has said, is the solution is to get in the middle. I sort of agree with that, but I actually think that there's an incredible amount of areas where people on the left and the right agree. Now, you take a supporter of Donald Trump, and you take I'm saying before he was the nominee, when he was really Trumpian, and a supporter of Bernie Sanders, and it is staggering, and you just put him in a room. And you take away all the labels and you get into individual issues. It is absolutely staggering on how many different issues a left-wing supporter of Bernie Sanders and a right-wing supporter of Donald Trump agree upon. Sure, they're probably going to disagree on abortion, probably going to disagree on taxes. But both of them are going to agree that we need to end these reckless free trade deals. Both of them are going to be opposed to the TPP. Both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, when they were running, campaigned for a higher minimum wage. Both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump said that that Medicare should be able to negotiate with the prescription drug companies just like the VA does. Both of them are going to agree in ending intervention in these never-ending Middle Eastern foreign wars. Chances are, there's a good chance both of them might agree that the government should not be tapping your phone without a warrant. And there's all these issues. And Ralph Nader wrote a brilliant book about this called Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And he goes through issue after issue, civil liberties, corporate welfare, opposition to military entanglements, term limits, initiative and referendum. And he goes through all these issues that there's bipartisan consensus on among the public, but are still not implemented. And you realize how much the media and the political parties, to Stephen Greenhut's point, are playing a role in dividing us by making people think that they're participating in a professional wrestling match. Those are the bad guys. Those are the Democrats. Those are the bad guys. Those are the Republicans. No, no, it's not the case. If you take away the labels and you actually get into issues and improving the country or your community, you'll see how many issues that the person in the other political party agrees with you on. That's absolutely the case. 800-848-9222. I do recommend that book. It's called Unstoppable. You can get it on Amazon. I have talked to Ralph about it many times, but it's worth reading. It's really, and it's a short book. It's a short book. It's really, really well done. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're talking about. Let me say hello to Ralph in New Jersey. Hello, Ralph.
Okay. I like to believe that politics in this country become contentious when the left set the term of the public discourse. For example, not to mention the censorship, okay? For example, how did the term China virus becomes a taboo? Okay, now you come up with inventive or creative term to describe it. Pandemic, plague, war, a cyclone, Wuhan virus, that kind of things, right? And, you know, there's a toxicity that's going on also with the public discourse in the country when you constantly push the issue of race. Ad nauseum. I'm sick and tired of this already.
Hey, Ralph, we have to end it there. Thank you very much for the call. Hey, we're going to continue with your calls next hour. And coming up in just a minute, yet again, a beautiful woman explains how difficult it is to be a beautiful woman. I will be playing the world's smallest violin for her coming up. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everybody, this is The Other Side of Midnight. It's Frank Morano. And all the political world is at this conference in Puerto Rico. It's called Somos El Futuro. I have a lot of friends that are there. And I actually got a text message just now from my friend Todd Shapiro, who's a terrific publicist, and he's in Puerto Rico now. He may call in a little while and give us an update exactly what we can expect to come out of Somos and give us maybe a behind-the-scenes look of what actually goes on at Somos. Because I've been, you know, we have New York One on one of the monitors here. And they keep showing the story of what's happening at Somos. And all I'm thinking is, what actually goes on out there? Is this just an excuse for politicians to get away from their husbands or wives for a day or two? Because it's a who's who of political power brokers. And they always say that's where the deal to become the next speaker is made. That's where this deal is made. So we'll talk to Todd Shapiro in a little while, find out what actually happens. But Veronika Rejek is a Slovakian model who is regularly attacked by jealous online trolls. She says, life is harder for beautiful people. She is 25 years old. She boasts 1.1 million followers on Instagram, where she frequently posts sizzling snaps of herself busting out of bikinis. But the blonde, who's now based in Vienna, Austria, says her account is constantly being deleted because users believe she is too pretty to actually be real. They think I'm an AI robot or a catfish online. It's what she told Jam Press. I call myself an alien. People don't believe I even exist. The embattled beauty queen describes the deletion of her account as discrimination. To make matters worse, she says she doesn't have many friends and people are often too intimidated to approach her. I don't think I'm perfect, but people are scared of me and don't want to talk to me. I have it worse as people make it harder for me because I'm beautiful. We've discussed this before. I find this complaint from incredibly good-looking people, while there is an element of truth to it, I find it absolutely absurd. I find it absolutely ridiculous for great-looking people to complain how they can't get taken seriously, how they don't have a lot of friends, how people think they're too good-looking to be believed. I find this so incredibly annoying. Ask these people how many of them would rather trade places with someone that's super ugly. Something tells me you wouldn't have 1.1 Instagram followers and be able to make a living essentially just being pretty. I find this so incredibly irritating, and I get what she's saying. And I get that there's some truth to it. But once you're at the level where you're actually going to complain, which is, make no mistake, what Veronica is doing here, where you're actually going to complain about being too pretty, you've lost me. You've lost me. Because there is not an ugly person in the world that wouldn't trade places with you. Whatever drawbacks, you know, it's like in some ways, it's the COVID vaccine discussion. Now, are there potential dangers of the vaccine? Sure. But the potential downside of getting COVID is so much worse than the potential downside of getting the vaccine. Whatever drawbacks there are to being beautiful, male or female, they are erased by all of the many advantages that you get by being beautiful. I'd be curious the last time Veronica Rajek had a traffic ticket. The last time she was pulled over and a police officer went ahead with giving her a traffic ticket. I'd be curious the last time she had to wait at the end of a very long line. It's funny, I was watching a Family Guy rerun over the weekend. And there's one episode very early in the series where Peter Griffin becomes attractive. I don't remember what happened to make him very handsome. But he's waiting in line at the grocery store and a very handsome guy comes over to him and says, "What are you doing here? You can't wait in this long line. Beautiful people don't wait in line. Come here to the front." And obviously that's fiction and it's silly and it's an animated series, but it had a kernel of truth to it. There is a different set of rules in society for the extremely good looking. I'm not talking about people that are average or slightly above average or, hey, you know, kind of good looking. But if you're at the level where you're a movie star or a model, there are so many aspects of society bending over backwards to cater to you. Even this applies to criminal cases. John Stossel, years ago when he was on 2020, he did a case about how much better treated beautiful people are in the criminal justice system than the ugly people. And it applies to evaluations in the workplace. It applies to relationships, both romantic and friendly. And I am so over hearing good-looking people complain that they're too good-looking or they're treated poorly because they're too good-looking. Something tells me Veronica Rajek, if she's having a tough time making friends, I don't think it has much to do with her looks. I think there'd be plenty of people that would love to be friends with her if she's a nice person, or maybe even if she's not. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. She insists that she has not had plastic surgery and says she does not Photoshop her snaps. You know, if you want to comment, I'd love to hear from you. That's 1-800-848-9222. So she's from Slovakia. I have observed, and this, I'm sure I'm going to offend somebody with what I'm about to say. Just deal with it. I have observed a fascinating phenomenon over the course of the last 25 years. Women, particularly from Eastern European countries, Slovakian, Polish, Russian occasionally, Croatian, Lithuanian, they come here to America and they all look like models. They all look like this woman. They don't have much in the way of excess body fat. They have perfectly chiseled features. And then what happens when they move to America? They get a taste of the American diet and they start eating like an American. And within 2 or 3 years of eating that American diet and being exposed to the American lifestyle, they don't look so hot anymore. They look a lot more like the average American. So what I would suggest to Veronica Rajek is, if she's really concerned that she's too beautiful to be taken seriously and that she's just annoyed that people keep insisting that she has plastic surgery, she should move to America for 3 years. And, if you know, eat America, and all of a sudden – Miss Slovakia, which she was a finalist in 5 years ago, will look like Miss New Jersey. Nothing against Miss New Jersey. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is my playing the world's smallest violin only for the models who are so beautiful that people don't believe that they've never had plastic surgery. I mean, you think of how egotistical it is to complain about something like this. I mean, it'd be like me saying, well, I have a difficult time making friends because I'm so much smarter than everybody. I mean, of course, it's true, but I would never say that to people. I mean, it's very difficult being smarter than everybody, but I would never tell people that. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment. Maybe you agree with her. This is a safe space. So if you're super attractive and you know what it's like to be discriminated against because you're so beautiful, whether you're male, female, or non-binary, now's the time. I want to hear from you. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. We're going to talk with Todd Shapiro coming up in about 20 minutes. He's going to call in live from Puerto Rico, where the Somos el Futuro conference is going on. Hey, this is a story I want to bring to your attention. And of all the things that you could think would cause a hiccup to the space program, I think this probably makes sense. But it's not one that I would have ever thought of. Astronauts set to return from the International Space Station won't be able to use the toilet on their return to Earth later today. NASA says the crew will be wearing absorbent undergarments since the toilet on the SpaceX capsule is out of service. Astronaut Megan MacArthur called the situation suboptimal. That's one way of putting it. But added, it's manageable. MacArthur and her crewmates will spend about 20 hours wearing NASA's version of adult diapers before their scheduled splashdown tonight. They've been aboard the space station since April. You imagine that? You go to space only to find the toilet on your spacecraft doesn't work? I mean, you talk about frustrating. See, that's somebody that has something to complain about. Not Veronica Rajek with 1.1 million Instagram followers. 800-848-9222. Mike is on Long Island. Hello, Mike.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, Mike. Thank you. I mean, it's very difficult being so much smarter than everybody, as I've now admitted. But in spite of that, I'm managing to persevere.
It has its drawbacks. I love and respect intelligent people. I think they're great.
Well, the truth is, Mike, I'm being facetious. I'm not really that much more intelligent than anybody else.
I think you're pretty sharp if you want to know the truth.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
All that aside, you watch The Sopranos, right?
Yes.
Uncle Junior, our buddy Uncle Junior, ever hear him talk about Olivia when he says to her, or when he says to Tony, actually, she's like a woman with a Virginia ham under her arm.
She's crying because she doesn't have any bread.
No bread.
You're exactly right. I thought of the same line reading this article about this supermodel. And I did this story again with a pro wrestler who said she's too beautiful to be taken seriously. This is so insulting. Yes, go ahead.
It really is. Have you ever considered doing like a Sopranos trivia game on your radio show?
That is not a bad idea. We will we'll find a way to do that. I allowed it to be an option when we did Stump the Audience for people who wanted to select it. But you're right. Maybe I'll find the appropriate day. We'll pick.
I'll be staying tuned.
Great. Well, we'll do. It's a great idea, Mike. Thank you. If you had
have
to
nice
pick,
day.
By the way, Mike, if you had to pick your favorite episode of The Sopranos, what would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know what I like? I like the Pine Barrens.
Pine Barrens.
Take the Russian guy out there.
That's a great one.
His duct tape.
That's a great one. Hey, what did you think of The Many Saints of Newark?
You know, I didn't watch it because everyone said it stunk, so I didn't even bother to put it on yet.
Yeah, I'd be just so curious to know your opinion. I had mixed feelings about it.
I think I owe it to myself to watch it because I've watched The Sopranos so often.
Yeah, I think because you're a fan, you'll probably have some strong opinions about it one way or another. And when you do, please let me know.
Mike.
Thank you. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're discussing, including this supermodel who, if you want to see what she looks like, I'm going to post this article to my Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan. And again, I'm sure she's a nice lady. But you talk about being tone deaf. You talk about having no appreciation for what other people go through. This is just crazy. 800-848-WABC. If you want to see her photos, you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. Maureen is in Paterson, New York. Hello, Maureen.
Hi, how you doing, Frank?
Doing well, thank you. Are you calling to complain about how difficult it is for beautiful people?
Well, I don't know if this ties into it. Look at poor Melania Trump, how gorgeous she is. They didn't even put her on the cover of Vogue, and she never complained about anything.
That's a good point. I mean, I think that the lack of celebration of Melania as First Lady was more of a reflection of how polarizing her husband was than anything having to do with her being too good looking, in my opinion. 800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
You know, Frank, it's really, you know, now we know why everything has to be made in China, because we spend probably $7 million for a toilet that doesn't work. It's just amazing. American technology at its finest. No wonder the Chinese are beating us hands down. I went to that page. I saw that model. I think Maria Shriver was nicer looking than that model. I don't think that model is so great. I think she's a nice looking woman, but nothing special, Frank.
Yeah, I think Marlena is very pretty. I think this woman is very pretty. But what bothers me is not that she's pretty. Good for her. God bless her. Or that Marlena is pretty. What bothers me is that she's talking about how tough she has it for being pretty. I mean, I find it so not only egotistical, but I find it like you have your head in the sand. I mean, there's real people that are having a tough time in life because of the way they look, and this woman is not.
Well, Frank, you know about that. I mean, you have that problem every day.
That's right. That's right, Neil. That's true. 800-848-WABC. Evelyn is in Bayonne. Hello, Evelyn.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks for passing my note to Ms. Huddy about Italy. I wanted to tell you, I know a girl from when I was working at Payne Webber who's the exact opposite of that model. Extremely gorgeous, naturally just beautiful, talented, smart, everything. She downplayed everything that was beautiful about her. She was called a dateless wonder in high school because all the guys were afraid to date her. She was the most down-to-earth, smart person, never bragged about anything, and everyone flocked to her. And I think it's awful of that woman saying that she was so beautiful. I mean, to me, that is the ultimate vanity.
Yeah, and again, I mean, look, she says a lot of other things in the article which are good. I just, you know, what it looks to me is like the newspapers in the clickbait environment in which they now work, they really wanted to post an article featuring photos of a bikini-clad model so that people would click on them. And, they're kind of using her as clickbait in this respect.
That's a shame. Thanks, and I will get Unstoppable, Frank. I will.
Yeah, check it out, Evelyn. I'd be curious to know what you think. All right, thank you.
I'm the reader. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks very much, Evelyn. 800-848-9222. Lauren is in New Jersey. Hello, Lauren.
Yeah, hi. You got me watching Fighting again. I couldn't believe Fury had an 80-inch arm. I was like, what?
Hey, can you turn off your radio, please, Lauren?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought it was off. He has an 80-inch arm. I mean, like his punch.
Yeah.
80 inches. I mean, I'm 6 feet tall. That's like me plus. I don't know. Anyway, I was really beautiful and 6 feet tall, good body, blah, blah. Oh, I'm sorry about the blah, blah. And I was really, really shy. So, no, I wasn't complaining, but all people would say is, oh, you're so pretty. Oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, you're pretty. Oh, you're beautiful. And I was shy. It just made me uncomfortable. That's all. You know, I wasn't like, I can't explain it. You know, it just made me uncomfortable. I was just so shy. And that's all people would say to me. And I didn't feel sorry for myself. I wasn't complaining. And this was way before social media, and I certainly, you know, I almost like, you know, I certainly, you know, I was a beatnik, you know, I wore, you know, oversized stuff with my hair parted in, and I thought I was, you know, Cher or something. but it was, that's all they saw. And I understand that, but sometimes, and I think people didn't approach me because they might have thought I was, you know, stuck up. Back in the day, we used to say stuck up, you know, or that I had so many friends or so many boyfriends. And the bottom line is I was very lonely and very self-conscious.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Lauren. And look, I don't want to make it sound like everybody who is very attractive has, you know, doesn't have any problems. Certainly we know that's not the case. I do think the level of complaining from Veronica is a bit much. It's a bit much.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Well, Lauren, I'm happy, you know, for your sake that you, that you are so attractive. Good for you. And I appreciate that we have so many attractive listeners listening to this show.
Well, and thanks for bringing me back to Fury, because my friend was the medical director for the New York State Athletic Commission. He's really pretty famous with the CTM business, Dr. Barry Jordan. And if you don't know about his work, I'm sure you will. And now I'm in my 70s and I'm watching boxing. And
That Dante Wilder fight with Tyson Fury was certainly.
Oh, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was something. That was something. I mean, that's one. It's well worth $80. I'm looking forward to the rematch. And
yeah,
then,
but I didn't have friends to watch it with because I'm still attractive in my 70s. But now it doesn't bother me. You know, I'm like, get over it, you know.
Yeah. Well, Lauren, I'm pleased to see that you're adjusting and dealing with your beauty in a way that that's conducive to a productive and healthy lifestyle. 800-848-9222. Jerry is in Nanuet, New York. Hello, Jerry.
Hi. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. You're great.
You
know what I'm calling about? I'm thinking about, look at Eleanor Roosevelt. All the good that she did. Did anybody ever just, you know, ever think, I just think when people are nice, everybody thinks you're pretty. And that's my feeling. I just think that as I look at people, if they're nice, they go out of their way for people, nice to little kids, you know, that's a beautiful person. Has nothing to do with
I completely
everybody.
Agree with you. I completely agree with you. And you didn't, again, Eleanor Roosevelt, you didn't hear her complaining about how difficult she had it when she did have many aspects of her life, both professionally and personally,
exactly.
That were pretty tough.
Exactly, yeah. And look at all the good that she did.
Exactly.
You know, as a person, she really did.
Absolutely,
so,
Jerry.
I just think everybody should be beautiful and be nice to one another and be kind. With this whole COVID thing, I found that when I am out, that people are nicer. You know, people will hold the door a little more. People let your head on the line, or, you know, a whole bunch of people in a dollar store will let some lady with a baby on their arm go up front without complaining.
Well, I'm happy to hear that.
It should be.
100%. I'm happy to hear that you've observed that, Jerry. Who knows? Maybe all of the mean people got wiped out during the pandemic. Maybe the only people that are left are the nice people. 800-848-WABC. Ellen is in New Jersey. Hello, Ellen.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, I was on the verge of calling you. So,
Ellen,
what?
No, you broke up there a second. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Okay. About the beautiful model, whatever she was. When I was in high school, there was one girl that was really beautiful. And in fact, she was voted the most beautiful girl in school. And about 10 years ago, I was in New York. I was in the Port Authority, and I was going towards the escalator. And all of a sudden, I hear somebody calling me by name. I turned around. I didn't see anyone I knew. I just kept walking. And again, someone's calling me by name, and this time using my family name. And I turned around. I still didn't see anything I knew. And all of a sudden, I saw this woman, literally a bag woman, pushing a shopping cart. She said to me, "You don't remember me, do you?" And you know, I was just stunned because she looked like, you know, a typical bag woman. And she told me who she was. I didn't know what to do. It was the same young lady that I mentioned. And I felt so bad for her. I took her in for a coffee. I don't know what people thought. Here I was with this, God forgive me, a bag woman. And it seemed she just went down and down and lower and lower and lower. She was married 4 times. And I got home that night and I told my mom, because she practically lived in our house. And I told my mom I had seen her. I had run into her. And she asked me how she was and everything. And I told her, and even, you know, she couldn't believe that this woman had gone down so low.
Well, that's the thing with looks, Ellen. And thank you for the call. And thank you for sharing that. It is very fleeting, right? There are certain people who, as they age, look like a totally different person. So that's why, to the prior caller's point, you know, a lot of the things that should be important to us and rewarding in society have to do, I don't want to sound corny here, but it should have to do with inner beauty. And there are certain universal truths that no matter how you look, you know, you should be able to be thought of as a beautiful person, and should have nothing to do with physical appearance, because looks fade. All right, we're going to do the $1,000 minute in just a minute, and then we're going to check in with Todd Shapiro, who's joining us live from Puerto Rico, will give us a field report on Somos el Futuro. And if you want to try and answer 10 trivia questions in 60 seconds, give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. Seventh caller to 1-800-848-WABC. will get to play the $1,000 minute and see if they can win $1,000 in 60 seconds. 800-848-9222. And then we'll check in with Todd Shapiro as well. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
On 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Yes, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. We're going to go live to Puerto Rico in just a minute. But before we do, let's see if we can give away some money.
The Other Side of Midnight presents...
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
Thank you, Chris Libertini, and let us meet today's contestant, Billy, in Rockland County. Hello there, Billy. Good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning.
So, Billy, you've heard this contest before. You're familiar with the rules?
A little, not totally.
Okay, so very simple, right? So I'm going to ask 10 basic trivia questions, and after I ask the first question, then you'll have 60 seconds. The timer will start running, and I'll continue asking questions until you get one wrong. If you get a question right, I'm just going to move on to the next question so that we can try and run through these as quickly as possible. And I have to tell you, I know you're trying to answer the questions quickly, but don't get flustered, because one of the things we've seen is people knowing the answer and then they just get flustered. So stop, take a second, think about it, and answer the question. They're not hard questions.
Can I like pass on it, or come back to it?
Well, you can't, because where the fear is that would give you or somebody else an opportunity to look up the answer to that question.
Yeah.
All right. So you ready to go, Billy? You want to give it a go?
Yeah.
Okay. What color is the sky during the day?
Blue.
Who was the first president of the United States under the existing Constitution?
Thomas Jefferson.
First president.
George Washington.
Okay, right. Maybe my phraseology threw you there. What do you call a home run with the bases loaded?
A grand slam.
What Newsmax TV personality is heard on WABC every weekday afternoon?
Greg Kelly.
What color starts first in chess?
I'm sorry? What color starts first in chess?
Yes.
Black.
Unfortunately, it is white that starts first. Billy, I'm sorry, but thank you for playing. We'll give your information to Pete, and we're going to give you a complimentary The Other Side of Midnight cap. So, Matt, I'm sorry. You guys change call screeners too quickly. Yeah, I mean, too often. So, Matt, I apologize. So you'll still take his information, right? Thank you. Now, I will say that question about who was the first president, the reason I gave him an opportunity to correct his answer is because I was afraid that my phrasing under the existing Constitution was misleading, and I don't want to be the cause of misleading. Now, normally the question would be, who was the first president of the United States? That's what I was looking for. But technically, you could argue that the first president of the United States was John Hanson, who was president before the Constitution, right? He was president of the Continental Congress before we had a Constitution. So that's why I said under the existing Constitution. So, but it didn't matter. He ended up losing anyway. Now, Meantime, I want to say hello to my very good friend, public relations strategist extraordinaire and a great guy, aside from his professional acumen, Todd Shapiro. Hello, Todd. How are you doing?
How are you, Frank? How's everything?
Everything is great. So are we talking to you in Puerto Rico now?
You are. You are. It was Puerto Rico, as they say, is the island of paradise, and now it's become the island of politics.
Well, so fill us in, Todd, because I find a lot of even politically astute observers, they don't necessarily understand what Somos is and why it's such a big deal. What exactly are you doing down there? What is Somos?
So Somos started, I guess, during the days of David Patterson's father, which goes back to Basil Patterson when he was in government. It was a time where they just came to honor Puerto Rico and, you know, don't leave Puerto Rico out or the politics of Puerto Rico and get it involved because they have such good relations with all the Puerto Ricans living in New York and everything and vice versa. It's really just to celebrate Puerto Rico, and it's become a tradition that, it started off with just the Latino caucus would have it or the Puerto Rican caucus. Now it's become everybody. It's become Black, Latino, Asian. Everyone's in Puerto Rico. Everyone's having fun. It's almost like Albany or City Hall without walls. You've never seen more deal making. You've never seen so much fun. I mean, I went to a party two nights ago. They were honoring Ruben Diaz. You know, Ruben Diaz is, the borough president.
Right, Junior.
Junior, rather. It started off where, it started off with a hip-hop night. Now, can you imagine the borough president is rapping, to hip-hop? Then all of a sudden, the chancellor of New York City starts coming in and starts dancing with him. Then all of a sudden, 10 seconds later, Slick Rick, the legendary rapper, comes out. And you've never seen politics like this in your life.
So,
crazy.
Todd, it looks like I'm watching the footage on New York One. I see people dancing and singing and having a good time. Carlina Rivera, who some people are saying might be the next speaker, I saw her doing what looked like karaoke. I saw Chuck Schumer waltzing with somebody. But what is the actual stated agenda? Are there conferences? Are there formal?
Well, there's conferences during the day from probably 9 o'clock to 2 o'clock. You probably learn more by sitting in a bar or sitting in the lobby of the hotel. But they have different things where the honor of labor or the labor unions are there. They speak to the labor unions. It was a stiff competition here, for the race for governor, where everyone's making the moves and stuff. You have everyone from, Governor Hochul to Tish James, to Tom Suozzi, to Steve Ballone. To Ronnie Williams, they're all coming in here, making their play, speaking before all the different groups, and yelling. Some are showing off their moves too. But it's really it's a great tradition. Puerto Rico is a great place. Eric Adams is like a movie star over here. You've never seen anything like because maybe people just want to keep their job. I don't know what it is, but everyone's just coming on to him like you've never seen possible. I had breakfast with Bill de Blasio, which was quite a breakfast. And I said to Bill de Blasio I said, Bill, it was some campaign. He goes, what do you mean? I said, there were really three campaigns. There was a traditional campaign. Then there was Curtis Sliwa, who ran against you, really didn't run against Eric Adams. And then there was Eric Adams, who just ran to raise money.
Right.
So it was a different element we've had in the election this year.
Todd, can you give us any insight in terms of any deals that might affect the New York City Council speaker's race, for instance, next year?
I can tell you one thing. Probably the most powerhouse there is right now is Brooklyn. Anything coming from Brooklyn is power. Because all the base is in power. If Justin, the councilman.
Justin Brennan.
Brennan was probably the favorite at one time, and he still might be. It's just the numbers in his race came so close that we don't know if he's in or out. will make it a big determination of, you know, where he is in the game. I think, you know, I think you're right what you said about, you know, about the other person having a better chance. But, you know, everything changes as we get closer, you know, to the first day of City Hall. I mean, you know, Bill de Blasio, most of us don't remember or do remember, you know, he helped pick the first city speaker when she first came.
Right, Melissa Mark Viverito. It's difficult to imagine her beating Dan Garodnick without de Blasio's help.
But de Blasio came in with a lot of power. Then he started talking about, you know, horse and carriages, and it didn't help him too much.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Todd Shapiro. He's a PR specialist and a crisis communication strategist. He's calling in from Puerto Rico, where he's been at Somos el Futuro. Todd, how much longer are you staying down there?
Yeah, I'll be back by the time, probably right after you get off the air.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're coming back today.
I'm sitting at an airport ready to come home.
Now,
go ahead. Sorry, please. I got to tell you, it's like you would love being here, Frank. I mean, because you know what? If you could have politics and have fun and do something really good, it's great. There's been a little controversy, I think, that was in the paper who paid for some of these trips. It was in the city paper, and I think the Post wrote something about where Bill de Blasio and Governor Hochul's paid for it through government funds, and most of them paid for their campaign. Some people actually paid personally.
Well, that's what Adams did, apparently, right? He paid out of his own pocket.
He paid out of his own pocket, and it probably was the smartest move of all.
Absolutely. Because, less frustration, less headaches that way. Todd, what about my brother, Joe Borelli? He's now presiding over a Republican council delegation of five, maybe even six. Are the speaker candidates being extra nice to him because they want the Republicans voting?
You know what? Joe Borelli is becoming a king over here.
Oh, please. That's the last thing he needs to hear.
Well, let me just explain one thing. Number one, you know, it's hard to get him off the golf course in Puerto Rico. We're not smoking a cigar.
Yeah, I can believe that.
But one thing, you know, he's become clear is, you know, being there and there's a, understand how many new council members are there right now. It's almost like a rebirth of the city council. The people you knew that were there aren't there anymore. Joe Borelli, you know, being there, you know. Not coming in new, has a lot of expertise, and he's looked at as a senior person, and people like him. Joe knows how to work the aisle. He knows how to work with Democrats. He knows how to work for Republicans. And one of the greatest speeches I probably ever heard was, recently heard, at least in Puerto Rico, was Eric Adams saying that, you know what, we shouldn't hate Republicans. We should hate hatred. And you know what? And saying that, you know what? They have the same values that we do. They want good things for New York. They don't want crime. And those are the kind of things. He goes, you know what? It's not bad to have good things in life. He goes, I wear Ferragamo shoes. So what? I like go to nightclubs. I go to Casa Cipriani at night. So what? I like to have fun. But I also come down and I go back to Brooklyn and I go back and I visit hospitals at night and I do my job. And it's not bad to have good things. It's not bad to want good things, and it's good to just remember who you are as well.
Well, that's great. You know, I hope that's the kind of tone he keeps as mayor, and it's not dissimilar from what I was saying about an hour ago. Todd, next year I will hopefully be there tagging along with you, and maybe we can have a cigar or a glass of Bacardi together.
Let me tell you, I look forward to doing some salsa with you. I may not be those pretty models, you know, like that you're talking about. But I can tell you, I'm probably one of those dumb guys that, you know, that you read about the models that are, you know, going to Russia thinking they're falling in love with you because they're on pen pals or.
Let me tell you, Todd, I know your wife, and you are doing just fine. Believe me, I think we're both.
I think we're both
hitting outside of our weight class.
Well, I love Frank Morano.
All right, you too, brother. All right, Todd, be safe, and I'll see you when you get back here.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. Todd Shapiro. They're calling him. Great guy. Hey, if you want to comment on anything we're talking about for 15 seconds, give us a call. We have 9 open lines that are yours for the dialing. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame coming up in about, 6 minutes. 800-848-WABC if you want to queue up. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, last week, I talked about seeing myself on these videos. Now, I'm not crazy about these videos, but thankfully we didn't have to do one today. But I think starting tomorrow, either the first hour of the show or maybe even the entire show will be simulcast on video at WABCradio.tv. So I saw this video of myself interviewing Curtis Sliwa last week. And I was mortified at how I looked. I was absolutely shocked at the visible weight gain in this video. Really, just beyond shocked. And I since then, since getting a glimpse of this video, I have been avoiding mirrors like crazy. And we were reviewing one of these videos in our Friday post-show meeting. I couldn't even look up at myself. So Mitch Suss, the founder of the Skinny Center in Westchester County, was listening. And he and his team of weight loss experts have done some amazing work with my colleague here at WABC, Greg Kelly. So he called, Mitch did, and said, if we're doing such a great job with Greg, why don't we try and do the same with Frank? So now I think that's what we're going to do. It's time. I've been talking about it. And I am eager to not only look better, but feel better and have more energy. And a big part of that is losing weight. So Mitch explained that the Skinny Center does exclusive lab testing and gets to the root cause of why you're not losing weight. Their program reveals genetic markers and isolates hormone imbalances. So the and gets to the underlying cause of why you're having a tough time losing weight. So I was inspired by seeing Greg Kelly. Greg looks great. If you've never seen him in person, you could see him on TV and look at how fit he is. So I'm in. So you could join us on this journey with the Skinny Center. Call them at 914-703-4811. That's 914-703-4811. Or go to theskinnycenter.com. That's S-K-I-N-N-Y center.com. I'm looking forward to getting started on this. And who knows? Maybe I'll see you down there. And Mitch can help you. TheSkinnyCenter.com. Born through a party in the county jail. The prison band was there and they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard this locked out jailbird sing. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. Everybody in old cell block. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You know, listening to Todd Shapiro, you know, I've been in politics a long time. In politics. I mean, I've been involved in politics. It would be an exaggeration to say that I'm in politics because I've never made my living in politics. And in fact, politics has cost me a lot more money than I've ever made from it. I haven't really made much. But I have been a student and a participant in politics for a long time. And I was talking earlier about the New York State governor's race, and it's coming up next year. And there has not yet been a gubernatorial election in the last 24 years that I haven't been involved in. And I've been involved one way or another in the gubernatorial elections. And I'm somewhat inspired by this Andrew Yang book and his desire to create a new political party, the Forward Party. I love so much of what he says there. And there is a big part of me that is tempted to try and move forward with the formation of a new political party. Now, I was involved in the State Independence Party. That experience ended in heartbreak. I was involved in the Reform Party. That experience was marred by 2 years of frustration and ended when we didn't get enough votes to qualify 4 years ago. Then I was involved in the Sam Party, which fell victim to Andrew Cuomo deciding that he was changing the rules and that the under his rules, the party no longer qualified. So in some ways, I'm thinking, all right, maybe I shouldn't try and get involved in a new political party, whether it's the Forward Party or forming a new party. Now, what we had in Curtis's mayoral campaign was we formed something called the Independent Party. We basically just named it. And he got several thousand votes on that line. Maybe, you know, the thought has crossed my mind, maybe I should look to run a slate of candidates around the state for statewide office and for the state legislature on a set of four or five core issues formulated around political reform. But then I think about the time that that goes into this. And when I do end up in the leadership of one of these political parties, you go from everyone being your friend to everyone being your enemy, because ultimately you have to make decisions about who to endorse and people get upset. And I remember when the Reform Party lost ballot access, my friend Vinny said to me, better for you, less time spent on petitioning and more time and less friends being lost. And he's exactly right about that. So I recognize that it makes no logical sense for me to try and get involved in a new political party or in building a new political party from the ground up again. But at the end of the day, there is something, it's an affliction that I have. There is something that I find so compelled to do and so called to do, but especially with a new baby on the way, it's not really something that I have the time to do. So I am very conflicted about that. All right. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 open lines. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, that's 1-800-848-9222. Comment on whatever you like, as long as it's not profane. And you too can have 15 seconds of fame. 1-800-848-WABC.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Lenore is on Staten Island. Hello, Lenore.
I'm a haircutter. A lot of times you say you need a haircut and you don't want to, go to stay in the city, okay? And I'd like to leave you my number because I think you can help me with a problem I'm having here. I voted for Curtis. I know Curtis, and I know Eric Adams, too. And he knows me, too, Eric Adams. Now he's mayor. We're going to see if he's going to help me. I would like you to interfere because I've been to Borelli. And
Lenore, best thing you could do is email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's a problem we're not going to solve in 15 seconds. Thank you, Lenore. 800-848-9222. Chris is in Bethpage. Hello, Chris.
I have three things to say. Sid is a great guy. I don't want the Floridoris. And by all means, stop Buchanan, stop Buchanan, stop Buchanan, stop Buchanan.
Pat celebrated his birthday last week. Anthony is in Edison. Hello, Anthony.
Yes, what a great victory in Virginia last week. And I think Winsome Sears is really a great, great lady. And she's going to show that racism is finally dead in Virginia. Have a nice day.
800-848-WABC. Danny is in New Jersey. Danny!
Hey, good morning, Frank. Great show, buddy. Great show. Listen, I know you're Spanish, and I don't think you're pronouncing Somos Futuro correctly. I just wanted to give you a slight correction. It's Somos El Futuro.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that correction. Jimmy is in the Bronx.
Sizzle moron.
Neil is on Staten Island.
Yes, instead of reading those inappropriate Dr. Seuss books to your child, read an appropriate book. May I suggest The Art of the Deal by Donald John Trump.
Bruce is in Nevada.
Is it possible that you could delay your diet?
Yes.
Because you shouldn't go before the holidays.
Well, I agree. I might have to do that, Bruce. I have been trying to do a little more time on the bike, though. So hopefully that'll keep me from looking like Dom DeLuise. Lorraine is in Riverdale. Hello, Lorraine. Lorraine?
Hello?
Hey, go ahead. Yeah, all right. 15 seconds, pal. 800-848-WABC. WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Still four open lines if you want to jump on board in our final 2 minutes of the WABC Early News coming up at 5 o'clock. And I am very much looking forward to being reunited with Juliet Huddy at 5 a.m. Elaine is in Riverdale. Hello, Elaine.
Hello, Frank. Somos el futuro, which means we are the future.
I appreciate the correction there, Elaine. Thank you very much. 800-848-9222. You can't get anything by this audience. They will correct you. Louis is in the Bronx. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? It's everything. Do you think that the Democratic Party is experiencing an exorcism?
Well, you know, there's certainly some things to figure out for them, right? I mean, if you look at what Curtis did in winning all the Asian communities in New York, that would be pretty frightening if I were a Democratic leader. Tom is in the Bronx. Hello.
Yeah, I'd like to say, Frank, that the good name for a political party, which drew a lot of voters years ago, was the Neighborhood Preservation Party. That it was not a party, but it drew, like you had corrected me one time.
Yep, yeah, that's not a bad name. Not a bad name. Melvin is in the Bronx. Hello.
Yes, you need medical attention for your inflated ego and your severe case of diarrhea at the mouth. Hopefully you can get over it and grow up.
Thank you, Melvin. I'm like Peter Pan. I'm never going to grow up. And finally, we'll end with Matt in Newark. Hello, Matt.
Is it me?
Yes, go ahead.
Please, we ask this girl at John Mark, what is his name, Cat Smith, show, to talk less. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. I couldn't really make out what he said there, but that's okay. We don't have an English-only requirement here on this show. All right. Hey, the WABC Early News is next. Juliet Huddy and I have a ton of interesting news, including updates from Puerto Rico, where they may be picking the next head of the city council. We have the update on this Texas music festival that was cut short after a stampede, a literal stampede. And we have some updates on the infrastructure bill that passed the House this weekend with the help of 13 House Republicans, including 6 from New York and New Jersey. The WABC Early News is next, to be continued.